What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 133 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the man, the myth, the legend himself, the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
Salutations, sir. I'm super excited. This is one of our favorite episodes every year. I feel like it's one of the episodes that we get the most listeners on outside of major esports championships as well. So I don't know about you, but I am stoked. It was a good E3.
It was a good E3. It was a long E3. Yeah. There was a lot of content to rewatch over and over and over. I can't wait to talk about it. So before we even dive into that, Nation, if you're not doing it already, you're doing yourself a disfavor. Hop on over to the social medias. That's your Twitters, your Facebooks, or as the other old generations calls it, the Instagrams and all that other cool stuff. Follow us on all of it. On, again, that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. While you're on Twitter, feel free to give Joey and myself a follow as well. Joey at Courtside King, myself at Fiasco. If you are watching here live on Twitch, welcome as always. Glad to have you on Twitch. You can find those amazing handles below our beautiful mugshots you are currently staring at. And if you're listening at the on the podcast later on down the road, they will be in the show notes for you below. Nation, I'm going to sum up this episode in one statement. E3. It's our annual E3 recap. I'm excited about it. Joey, you're excited about it. As if we don't have lives outside of gaming, we put aside our jobs, our families, our friends, a wife in your case, Joey, to watch nonstop E3 action. So tell us, what E3 showcases are we going to be touching on this week on episode 133?
Guys, we'll be touching on all of the major E3 showcases per usual, but there is a catch here. We're not hitting on every single one of the 100-plus games. Nobody's got time for that. So if we miss that one indie title that you were super stoked about, let chat know. Hit us up on Twitter. We can bring it up next week. If we hit one of those 3,000 Final Fantasy games that's going to be remastered, it's okay. We're going to make our way back to it eventually because it's probably not coming out till 2021. So we will make our way through as much as we can tonight. Feel free to hit us up in chat if there are games you want us to touch on in particular. But we will be kicking off after our drink of choice.
Yeah, I mean, only like 116 games I think we're covering.
It was a lot. This
I mean, it was a massive, massive E3. So Joey, you just touched on it. It's time for the drink of choice. This is going to be one of the longer episodes that we do every year. So we're going to need some vocal lubrication here. We're going to need something to quench our thirst for this entire episode. Joey, I need your drink of choice for the 133rd time.
Rating at 90 points on the wine enthusiast scale, I'm drinking a red blend from Portugal, and it is from Casa Santos Lima.
Whose scale is that off of?
The wine enthusiast scale, I believe. Yeah, wine enthusiast.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, if you got to go by somebody else's scale, that's fine, too. Joey, because it's going to be an outstanding episode, I'm going to my outstanding Bacardi Limon rum mixed with some Coke Zero because, you know, they go together for some reason. Joey, we have our beverages. It's that time of year again. I can't believe we're doing it again. It is time to tackle the monster that is E3. Let's kick it off, Joey. What do we got?
We're going to kick it off with a mini monster in Google Stadia with the Google Stadia Connect. So guys, Stadia games will be playable by PC, consoles, and Pixel smartphones, starting with the Pixel 3 series. The Stadia will support streaming up to 4K 60 frames per second at a minimum connection of 35 megabits per second. So a little bit of speed there needed. It's going to require a 10 megabit speed connection to play games at 720p. Overall, I think this is all right, John. But again, we're comparing it with stuff like Microsoft's xCloud. There's already other softwares out there. I don't know if it has enough bang for buck based on speed and based on frames per second to really compete yet.
Yeah, it's still kind of in that gray area. The idea behind it's great. It's got a monster behind it in Google, but there's still just so many question marks around it. Is it going to be, I really hate passing judgment at it, but there's just been there's a handful of people that love the idea of Stadia that have access to it that are using it right now, and they're like, okay, cool, this is great. But the problem is the jury is still kind of out on this idea that is Google Stadia. And as of right now, I'm not sold on it, and I'm right there with you, Joey. I think the possibility is there, but as of right now, even after E3, it's like, okay, that's great. I want to see this actually work. I like the model. The idea is interesting. I still haven't seen enough from them yet.
Right, and I'm right there with you. The biggest thing is Google obviously has the connections. They have the infrastructure to make something like this work, but without actually feeling that latency and how much it's going to be, how it's going to look on different internet speeds, there's still so many question marks. On top of that, Google is just entering gaming. Outside of their little loading screens that you eventually see or every once in a while see on the Google page, they really haven't dove much into gaming yet. They're competing with Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo. There are so many big companies already out there. Even Tencent in China has such a huge leg in gaming already. How are they really going to find their way into this? A few ways can be exclusives. Other ways, if the Stadia actually works like they promised it to, we could see some potential. But again, it's still a long slope for me. It is going to come in a monthly subscription fee of $9.99, set to launch in November. What are your thoughts on the price?
Price point's good. I think $9.99 is a good price point. But I feel like I love the fact that everything is going in the way of subscription packages. My only issue is I want something that's like a Netflix subscription where you have all the major studios coming together. I don't want, you know, Ubisoft having their own. I don't want EA having their own. I don't want Bethesda having their own. Because now I'm shelling out like $100+ per month for these games. And, you know, you're really going to start limiting people. Like, the idea of trying to get rid of people buying single title games at full price and trying to get them to explore a developer's library, it's okay. But the idea of that one fan that is solely an EA fan or solely an Ubisoft fan or solely a Square Enix fan or solely a Nintendo only fan, really, I feel like those populations aren't really there. If you can kind of bring it all together like a Steam can do where it has a lot of developers in there, or the horrific hated Epic Store, that's really the way to go, I personally feel. And if you were to say, hey, look, for even $19.99 a month for a Steam store, kind of like hypothetically speaking, and you have access to all the games, to me, that would make more sense. Or make it like an a la carte kind of thing where it's like, okay, you know, oh, you're a shooter fan, $9.99 a month. For you get access to all the FPSs on our platform, and we have all these major titles from all these different developers and so on and so forth. That's fine. For Google Stadia, I feel like $9.99 is a solid beginning price point. I don't think it's going to stay there. I do think Google will probably raise the price once more games come on that platform, once they kind of figure it out. Because really, to me, Google Stadia is fine-tuned for Google Fiber, which is essentially the next thing after like Verizon Fios. Like the next highest thing is that gigabit speed from fiber, from Google Fiber. It's not available everywhere yet. So, you know, with the latency issues that everyone knows it's going to have, with the small library that it has so far, it's not up there with everyone else. I feel like $9.99 is a good point, but I feel like it's going to go up in the future.
Okay, so the Netflix example, I love it. I wish everyone was doing that. But at the same point, I think every company is going to continue to do it. Even looking at Netflix, you still have it. You're going to have it with Disney. You have it with Hulu. You have it with YouTube. You have it with, I think, NBC or ABC is doing it. And the other one's about to release it. CBS does it. I feel like gaming is going to finish in that same way we see cable going. Everyone's going to have their own streaming platform. We heard more get announced at E3 as well. So, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to go that way, John. As much as I would love to see it that way, and as much as many gamers would, I just don't feel like it's going to go that direction, unfortunately. On top of that, I think the Google Fiber thing is great, but at the same point, it's in so few cities. I want to say it's in like 10 to 15 right now, and it's not even in Washington, D.C., the frickin' nation's capital. So, with that being said, with this rolling out in November, they can only put fiber in so many cities. I think it's in like Austin and Dallas. It's in LA, maybe San Diego, maybe New York, maybe Boston, but it's just not in enough hub cities. And then anyone in rural areas is really screwed. They're looking so, so much farther down the line to be able to play something like this. So when it comes down to it, I think Stadia is a great concept, but someone like a Microsoft who already has Xboxes in so many homes is going to have such an easier really rollout of their system in Project X Cloud. So I expect Microsoft to get a huge start on Google in that sense, and that to me is going to hurt the Stadia quite a bit coming out the door depending on exclusives. One game coming to the Stadia that we do know is Baldur's Gate 3. This is a big announcement coming at their conference. Baldur's Gate was hinted at a bit on Twitter prior to this conference. Baldur's Gate being one of those really popular franchises from way back when, it hasn't seen another game in years. Now Baldur's Gate 3 coming out. I think this is a great move by Google. I actually don't know if it's an exclusive, But either way, giving some big title, a title that a lot of people are nostalgic about, is a good way to bring older generations into new content and into new infrastructures like Google Stadia. And I think that'll really help the transition here with Baldur's Gate being a release title. Okay, John, I've talked enough about Google Stadia. I'm not super excited for it. I don't know if you are overall.
No, I'm not.
I just feel like there's a lot still to know. And right now, we really don't know the facts. From the demos, we've heard a lot of questions. We've seen latency in their presentations. So I'm really curious how they can tone that out before November. They still have, what is it, about 6 months before then, if I'm calculating quickly in my head. So they got a little bit of time to really flesh things out and see how things go. But at the same point, we really need to see some fixed issues, because at least from what I've heard on the demos of xCloud, Microsoft is very ahead of the game in that area. Let's move on to EA Games and their briefing. EA's format, John. Their format was quite rough. I was not a big fan of this format. It took them about 3 hours to make it through 6 games. We are talking 2 games an hour at EA's conference. That was a bit rough for me, a bit rough for the audience. I think a lot of people thought this was the weakest conference, not because of the content, but mainly because of how long it took them to go through the content. So much talking, so little bit shown. One of the biggest highlights was Respawn's newest title, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. What were your thoughts on this one?
I actually like it. As a huge fan of Star Wars and some of the older Star Wars games, I think it's great. And one of the great things that I like about this game is it kind of picks up in an area of the Star Wars universe that really hasn't been explored too much. And this is the time right after Order 66 is given off. And like, as a Star Wars fan, you know, you watch the original trilogy, then you watch the what are we calling episodes 1, 2, and 3? The prequel trilogy, the whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Let's go. Episodes 1, 2, and 3. So we see Order 66 carry out. You know, essentially the death of the Jedis, right? This is kind of cool. It's kind of it's there. Like, everyone knows, you know, carry out Order 66, and that's all you know. Like, you see a couple clips in the movies of Order 66 being carried out, but other than that, you don't know too much about it. You have to go into the comic books. You have to go into books or kids' books on Star Wars that were written about it to kind of find any more information about it. Now we have a video game that's going to take place during that execution of Order 66. That's why I'm hyped about it. Star Wars games are usually pretty good. They're not anything that really kind of blows you away as a Star Wars fan, but they're just kind of there as like added nostalgia, a little more lore, a little extra content for you. The games are overall pretty good, and the graphics looked amazing. The gameplay looked great, and I think so far I'm excited for this title, Joey.
Chat does not even remember the plot of Star Wars.
Oh my
what is
gosh.
Going on in this chat room tonight? But yeah, John, I think you hit on a lot of the major stuff. This is a fun part of that. Well, not fun, but a very interesting part of the timeline with Order 66 being executed. This is one of those Padawans that made their way out that was able to escape. Cal Kestis is the name of the player you'll be playing as. This kind of reminds me of a graphically intense version of The Force Unleashed, the game we saw feels like about a decade ago at this point. Really fun game where you could really dive into the RPG elements of a Star Wars game. With that being said, again, the graphics are very souped up, much better. And there's a lot of stuff that we actually didn't see that I've heard about from people who demoed the game. In particular, you'll be able to build a crew. So you'll be able to build a squad that you can really send out on missions and go out on missions with. You can also go to different planets from what I've heard. There's like tons of different elements that no one saw in trailers. We saw a few boss battles. We saw some exploration, some really interesting elements, but they didn't really dive into the RPG elements that much. We have no idea what the skill tree looks like. We have no idea what abilities we can really unlock as we go outside of these cool looking boss fights. So I think they're really holding their cards still here. I think they're trying to show it and make it look very flashy, but they haven't really given us any of the in-depth, really the mystery behind this game. How do we build our character? How do we excel at this game? Is it going to get really easy? Are the enemies going to be able to adapt based on the paths we choose or whatever? So I feel like there are a lot of RPG elements still missing that are there. We just don't know what they are yet. Speaking of missing, players on Apex Legends.
Nice.
Oof.
Nice.
That hurt.
I like that. That was good.
Almost a game of legend at this point. Respawn and EA have looked to jolt the Apex community back to life with the release of Season 2 Battle Charge. And they're kicking it off, John, with a new electrifying character, Watson. Watson is going to be a female character, and she's going to add some voltage to the roster with the ability to build electrified fences and deploy pylons that can regenerate ally shields. One of the coolest parts of these games for me, John, is the characters. I think Watson's going to fit on this roster very well.
Yeah, she adds an interesting support role. You know, when you take a look at the roster of champions, heroes, whatever we're calling these characters nowadays, is Apex still even a game? Is it still being updated? I guess it is still being updated if it was at E3.
It's not at its apex anymore. It's, we can
no,
say that.
No, it's definitely... damn it, Joey. No, it's not. I like the idea of Watson. Like, here's my issue. I was excited watching this announcement for Apex Legends, but the problem is it didn't excite me enough to want to actually play this game again. EA did itself an incredible disservice by really just not caring about this game after the enormous wave of enthusiasm and downloads and hours of people playing and esport organizations throwing money into the esports scene for this game. EA is now waiting until E3 to really do anything. And really, Joey, I don't want to spoil the rest of this announcement, you know, going down the list here for Apex Legends, but Watson, again, great character. As someone who plays support a lot, I like her kit. I like the idea of being able to recharge your teammates' shields. Electric fences, okay, that's a little too real world for me. But it's fine. Like I like the idea of it. But that alone's not going to make me want to come back. And I feel like the next couple things we're going to talk about for Apex Legends, you know, one doesn't really excite me either, and the other one is way, way too long overdue.
Okay, let's roll into those. But first, I have to say, I think they really screwed up with the Season 1 Battle Pass.
Absolutely.
I feel like that was the biggest issue. When half of the Battle Pass is getting titles that you can only display 3 at a time per character, and does anyone really care how many times you were shot inside of a certain building or whatever?
Nope.
Like, it's just, there wasn't enough. We needed more weapon skins, we needed more character skins, maybe custom emotes, something other than titles. But I feel like more than half the Battle Pass was titles. And after I unlocked the first 10 or whatever, I'm like, okay, do I really need another title? Do I need another way to display stats that are really meaningless? So that's why I fell off the game, and I feel like these are not really going to bring people back that far. We have a new weapon coming, though. That is the L-Star. It's going to be a very powerful plasma rifle that can tear through armor and blast down doors. That is pretty sweet to me. I like the idea of blasting down doors. Again, not sure if it's going to blast down the door to get me back in the game, but it is exciting to think about. It will only be found in care packages, though. So the gun you're adding in is going to be extremely rare and only found in care packages. Is that really going to bring people back? One thing that might, though, is ranked mode. So this is pretty exciting. We knew it was coming at some point. They have now officially announced it. There will be 6 tiers, ranging from Bronze to Apex Predator. Very similar to what you see in an Overwatch or a League of Legends, where there's different rankings that you can build your way up. Again, a lot of RNG in Battle Royale games, but I do think a ranked mode does allow for more climbing, does allow for people to feel more invested. So I think that's a great start. Again, it comes back to the Season Battle Pass for me. They are launching a Season 2 Battle Pass. Supposedly, it has more legendary skins in it, more crafting materials, and new challenge-based objectives. The challenge-based objectives are big for me. That's very much Fortnite a la carte, I would say. That's really one of the things that drove Fortnite so far, was that people had these weekly objectives to keep them coming back. I think that's a great addition. But again, the thing Fortnite does right, and I hate praising Fortnite, good gosh, but they do so many things right. The fact that they change up the map. Apex has been moving these long giraffe-looking creatures around the island, but nothing has happened. I feel like in Season 2, we need a map change or we need something to happen, whether it be some kind of event on the map, a storm that comes over, maybe this giraffe wants to eat a character as they're dropping, like something needs to happen. And that's the way they bring this back, in my opinion. Better season passes, but again, there's got to be some changes. The map is great, but it's not enough to keep playing that same map over and over, even with ranked mode for me.
February 4th, 2019 is when this game was secretly announced. It is now, at this very moment, this recording, it's June. Yeah, June 18th. I forgot what month it was. June 18th, right?
We're only in the second briefing.
We are 4 months into this Apex world, and this thing has taken over Fortnite and then disappeared in the matter of 4 months. Ranked mode, something that was talked about for the weeks leading up after the launch of Apex Legends. It is now June 18th, and they announced it at E3 that Ranked is finally coming to a Battle Royale mode. And Joey, chat's kind of giving me a hard time about this, but apparently my facial expression gave it away here. I'm sorry. The highest rank is you would be known as an Apex Predator? That is a terrible title. That is absolutely horrific. That just sounds bad. Like, Apex Predator, you know what? Look.
You're one of those few that's still lurking around in the shadows of Apex.
See, you're not making it any better. The gun sounds cool, but, I mean, I don't understand. Like, okay, cool, so it can shoot through a door, it can blast doors down. Okay, that's awesome. You also have a character that can essentially gas out your entire team if you're hiding in a room. You also have a character that is incredibly mobile. You have another character that can deal out health. You have another like, to me, the idea of having a gun that shoots through a door, it's like, okay, cool. It's nothing too special, but then you go, now, wait a minute. If it's not special enough, it's only available in care packages. So you have to play Lifeline if you want to get a care package. That would increase your percentage. But again, it's probably at such an incredibly low percentage that you're not going to get it every time. And probably, you know, I might need to read more into this, but chances are it's probably not even going to be available in her care package. It's going to be the random ones that drop throughout the entire game when you're playing Apex. And if it's even that, the percentage is going to be even lower. They're like, oh, but we're going to, you know, say a 5% chance of this gun popping up in a care package, and we're going to limit it to the NPC drops, you know, the drops that the players themselves can't control, which is like, what, 4 a game? So you have 4 drops with a 5% chance of getting it instead of 5% chance with the care. You know, to me, I don't like it. It's not enough to win people back. It's not enough to take down Fortnite again. EA has completely mismanaged this from the get-go. It had so much potential, and now it's dying faster than Farming Simulator? No, that's still pretty big in Europe. Why is that still big in Europe? I don't understand why.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they need to change for this one. Dropping one character and one weapon are just not going to do it. If I'm at this E3 presentation, first of all, I have people link their Twitch accounts to get them involved. Then I give them a free purple weapon skin of some sort for viewing the conference. Then on top of that, I make a change in that conference. Blink it out, do something fancy on a video, have something glitch out, and then throw some kind of map change in. Get people excited. Get people playing Apex right after that conference ends. That, to me, is where they missed so much opportunity. Do I really want to go for another battle pass, even though it has a little bit more material, a little bit more skin action in there? Again, I don't really care for the titles. Skins, you can only wear one at a time. Like, it's not that enthusing to me. I don't feel like there's enough in this. I like Fortnite in the sense that you can build skins as well throughout the battle pass. Again, hate Fortnite as a game. They do so many things right, though. Give a battle pass where you can build it over the course of the season. Make it so you have to unlock certain objectives in certain weeks or do certain objectives to unlock certain aspects to a skin. It's so much better. It keeps people engaged longer. This, to me, is not the win for Apex. Maybe they'll get it right in Season 3.
And you got to do something with the skins. A lot of the skins look like just, they're like generic recolors. They're just recolors of the skin. It's something that League of Legends is known for and Overwatch is known for. You just recolor the skin, you call it something different, and you charge an extra 250 in-game currency for it if you're Overwatch, and you charge another 500 RP if you're Riot to unlock a chroma or something else special. This is a glorified, you know, recolor. And that's what Apex is doing. And they're making it even harder to get. So, like, okay, cool, look, this looks just like the base blue skin, but it moves, it shimmers, it does things as I move. Why? Like, it's not even that cool. Like, the skins in Apex don't have that Fortnite feel. And Joey, I'm right there with you. I hate giving credit to Fortnite, but Fortnite, when it comes to skins, has it down pack. They're limited rotations. They're only available for a season. And several seasons ago, they introduced the whole build your skin throughout the battle pass kind of thing, where you start with the base skin, then you level it up as you keep playing, you keep playing, you keep playing. And then at the end, you get this really cool, awesome, epic-looking skin. Hey, Apex, it's okay to kind of copy what Fortnite's doing. A lot of people are kind of expecting it. When you introduced respawning into a battle royale, what did Fortnite do? Weird, right? They copied it. Strange.
Okay, now, just so we can get ahead of EA's pace, let's go a little higher than 2 games every 20 minutes here. Battlefield 5, 4 new maps set in the Mediterranean region. John, I love the Mediterranean personally. We have Al Sudan launching in June, Merida in July, the Lofton Islands and Province to follow shortly after. I really like the map rollout here, John. The fact that we're getting one map a month, I think, is a really good idea here. Again, it's not changing a map like we see in a Fortnite, but it's adding new content. It's constantly keeping players engaged with new maps. They always have something new to learn. I think that's a really good move by Battlefield 5, which had a very lackluster launch. On top of that, they're raising the max rank. This one I'm not a huge fan of. They're moving it from 50 to 500. Seems a bit excessive to me. It's kind of taking on that Call of Duty-esque style with prestiging, where you can kind of just keep leveling and keep leveling and redo things and keep leveling. I feel like that can only engage people for so long. I feel like it gets boring after a while. But Battlefield 5 now has 500 levels, so enjoy your time playing it on these new maps for the next 4 months.
But you know damn well that those same people that get to level 500 in 2 days are the same people that are, like, gold in Overwatch and, like, max level, like... And you, like, you log into, you know, you log onto the game and you're like, okay, cool, my SR, I'm down at 1300 SR. Like, oh, hey, look, they have a guy that's like the next color after gold, whatever that might be, and all six stars. This guy's literally like level 8972 right now. And here I am sitting at level 36. So it's like, wait a minute. Like, okay, so we got to try hard on the other team or someone who did account boosting. I'm not going to point fingers. You know, it. A lot of people get pride out of that. Good for you. If you want to grind to level 500 from 50, you know, in the first 2 days, go for it. But yeah, Joey, I also like that alone isn't like that doesn't get me. But I do like the idea of releasing maps every month, new content like that, scheduled content that fans and gamers can count on, will always result in a spike of players, people playing and downloading your game. That is a great way to keep your audience happy. It's a great way to keep the game fresh and new. A new map can do wonders for a game. It can take a game that has that, you know, League of Legends is special in the sense that it literally has one map. It has Summoner's Rift. That's where the main game is played. Yeah, they have seasons where cosmetically it changes, but essentially it's the same map every time you log on to play. There's nothing different. There's certain things in the map that change that are different every game, but essentially it's the same game every time you log on. I think that is the exception. Games like Overwatch, Battlefield, games where it's like those, they have to have something that changes.
100% agree. Speaking of changes, Sims 4, Aloha, The Sims is getting an island living expansion. This means from beach towns to barbecues to dolphins to volcanoes to mermaids and more, we are getting beachified here at The Sims. Additionally, the developers have revealed that the Realm of Magic expansion will be following the beach expansion sometime this fall. John, you as an avid Sims player, what are your thoughts on this one?
Sims, I get a lot of flack for playing The Sims. I don't care. The Sims is like one of those games that go like all the way back to my childhood. That's the reason why I like it so much, but it's cool. You get to create like this alternate world, really, and you can live out the life you want to live out, whether, you know, you're living in a cardboard box on the side of 7th and F Street in D.C., or if you're living in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., or whatever. The island living expansion is something that a lot of Sims players have been dying for since Sims 3, when they had a similar beach expansion pack, if you will. It took Sims forever. It took EA forever to finally get to this point where they're putting beaches back into the game. And Sims 4 has probably been the most successful incarnation of The Sims. It's a decent priced expansion pack coming out at $40. The base game itself, I believe you can buy it right now for $5 on Origin. So it's actually a really good deal. They constantly have sales on all of their content, so you don't have to spend an arm and a leg. But that's what Sims does to keep people coming back, is releasing that new content, that those new expansion packs that make the game even bigger and better. And in this case with Island Living, I can't tell you how many videos I've watched on YouTube from gameplay from insiders and early release partners that have played this game. It looks incredible. The idea of being able to have a house on the side of a beach, you can go swim in the ocean, there are sharks, there's krakens, you can turn your sim into a mermaid. Joey, you could turn yourself into a mermaid in The Sims. That's how awesome this is. Like the new cosmetics they're bringing in, the new world they're bringing in, there's so much potential with this, and it really is exciting. Now, the Realm of Magic expansion, this is kind of like one of those funky things they do every now and then. Like they did one with vampires, they did one with a town, I believe, that's kind of like set in like New Mexico, almost like a Roswell kind of feel, with Area 51 and everything. But
interesting,
it was a little weird. Like, okay, they're like there was an alien invasion, so they put out these funky expansions every now and then to like kind of get the creative juices flowing, and it's okay, it's not bad. Like the magic expansion doesn't get me excited, but the island living with volcanoes and waterfalls and mermaids and dolphins, Joey, you can play with a dolphin. That's how, like, I am excited. I have already pre-ordered this. It is releasing this Friday on the 21st of June. I am playing it this weekend. Of course, that's after the wedding I go to. But I'm pumped for Sims 4. Yes, you can make fun of me for it. I don't care.
There you have it, guys. Sims the Caribbean coming very soon.
Olay.
FIFA 20, a new Volta mode has been added, and it looks to capitalize on the nostalgia of FIFA Street games. John, I'm excited for this mode, but there are many question marks around it. The new mode will include a story mode as well as a league mode, but there, again, questions regarding the multiplayer aspects. Can you play as your pro with other players? A lot of people are saying that you have to go with your pro, but then computers alongside you and you control the whole team. That, to me, is a big turnoff if that is actually the case. Then we have Madden NFL 20. We're going to see a new X-Factor system being implemented that will allow players to unlock new abilities for elite NFL players by completing set objectives. If you want to throw a cannon arm like Patrick Mahomes, you have to complete these objectives, then you unlock that ability. To me, I'm not a huge fan of Madden going super X-Factory here. I feel like it almost becomes too superlistic. That's not even a word. No. So like, it's too fancy for me. Like, when we added the vision cone, there's a reason it died. I thought that was a cool invention. I thought it brought a new aspect to the game, but now you're bringing almost like these superpower abilities. Again, you're not seeing players fly, but at the same point, adding abilities into a game, changing up statistics on a fly like that, I get how it encourages players. At the same point, it feels like it unlevels the field as well.
It really does. And, you know, when you have a game like Madden, where it kind of evolves as the football, you know, as football evolves itself, you kind of have to find different ways to kind of make a game exciting. You know, for a while you had NFL Blitz and that did incredibly well. It was an arcade style. Madden has always been a simulator. It's always been a not really an arcade game, but more of that, you know,
realistic
simulation. And when you add quirky things like this to it, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, we do understand that certain players in the NFL have amazing skills, amazing talents. But then again, if you make it to the NFL, which is like 0.1% of all football players in the world will ever make it to the NFL, it's a very exclusive club, you already have an X factor. You're already there. Like, you're already the best of the best. So why do you need an X factor? Like, it's like, oh, you're going to say like, oh, he has close-in speed that, you know, if you double tap X on a cornerback when he's closing in on a wide receiver, you get an extra bolt of speed. It's like, you know, does that really happen in real life? You know, and within 3 yards of you closing in on the receiver, all of a sudden you go from, hypothetically speaking, 3 miles an hour to 5 miles an hour. It doesn't really happen like that. You know, it's, I don't know. It's weird. I'm not a huge fan of it. I like the vision cone that you brought up. I actually did like the vision cone because I felt like that was a little more realistic versus having a quarterback looking off to his right and throwing to the left and having to be completely accurate, which made no sense. The vision cone kind of brought that feeling of when you play as a quarterback, you need to make sure if you're looking to the right, you're going to be more accurate throwing to the right versus trying to throw to the left across your body. That makes sense. So I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of the X-Factor system. I feel like it feels like Madden's in an interesting place. Do they want to keep going on the simulation route, or are they trying to become more arcadey? Or are they trying to have both modes available in the same game? If that's the case, you need to offer two versions of that game. One that's like a normal Madden game with ratings and everything that update on a weekly basis, that's a standard game, and one that has X factors or things that you can build into it. Kind of like a cheat mode, if you will, where you can like intensify certain stats or put in funky rules or stuff like that to make it a little bit more Blitz-esque, if you will. But don't change it to the base game. That really does hurt the game, I feel like, and it really hurts the fan base too.
Amen to that, brother. Additionally, EA spent time discussing the Face of the Franchise feature, which will allow you to create a college player and then help him raise through the ranks to make it into the NFL. I'm a fan of this. I think this is a cool way to update the franchise mode. Additionally, we have heard rumors of an NCAA game possibly coming back. It did not do very well previously, so I'd be surprised if they brought it back, but it could be there. College football does have a lot of hype. Chat's talking about it now as well. The key for me, if they decide to bring it back, I think this would be a cool way to do a my player in the college game and bring him all the way up into Madden.
Well, they originally did have that. If you bought the NCAA football game, you could create your player in the NCAA football title, go through all 4 years or 3 years if you wanted to enter early, and then export him into Madden for the draft. And that way, if you did that, you were guaranteed to have higher stats, higher skill levels, higher everything, versus if you were to create your own character and then go through the combine to try to up your stats there, or you bought stats. You paid real-life money to make your player even better. So they had it before, and personally, like, while the NCAA games didn't perform as well as like a Madden or the pro level of any sport game out there versus this college component, it was still fun for the people who loved college football, who loved football in general, that did buy both titles, myself included. That's what I looked forward to, is the college football title came out first. I had 2 months to get through my career, and then when Madden came out, I can transport them right into Madden and go. So I love the idea that they're bringing it back for the face of the franchise. I love this idea. And Joey, I hope the NCAA actually allows NCAA football for video games to come back. I want the licensing to come back. I want EA to have it. I think they did an amazing job. There was usually a generation or a year behind where Madden was, graphically and gameplay-wise, but I think that's still fine. I think that kind of feels normal when you compare college football to the pro scene. It feels like that there is a major difference. So to me, that adds like a cool little real world thing to it as well. I like it. Face of the franchise, I like that, but I would rather have NCAA football back to do it that way through two full games versus a mini thing like this.
Right. I was a huge fan of NCAA as well. Unfortunately, the sales sucked. I believe they're actually below the MLB games even. The coolest mode for me was actually the mascots, that you could play as pretty much any mascot in the game, which was super cool to me. It was just interesting. Like, playing as Notre Dame, watching these little leprechauns run around and catch touchdowns is just fun. But overall, if they bring it back, I don't expect it to be around very long. I think in terms of sports games, it's going to be around as long as Apex Legends has been. So one season, I'll give it, maybe two. It just, the sales were not there, and I really don't think they'll be there again this time. I think the big suffering for football games, particularly the NCAA, when you bring it out, one, you're either going to cut into Madden sales, or people are just going to choose one or the other. Playing both games at the same time is just too much. If the NFL followed NCAA in terms of seasonally, I think it would work really well to transition from one to another. But with both running concurrently at the same time, I just don't see both games doing well. Okay, John, let's move on from our second briefing here to the Microsoft Xbox briefing. Kicking things off, the Xbox Game Pass is now available on PC. For those of you who do not know what Game Pass is, think of it like a Netflix for gaming type of subscription. So we've seen other developers offer subscriptions. This one's a bit more like Netflix in the sense that it's not just from one developer. If you go to like an Ubisoft or EA Games, any of those, they have their own games pretty much on them outside of Epic and Steam. Now you're looking at something that is completely different. They have their own games, but they're also bringing in a lot of indies, a lot of third-party developers as well, and that's what you have with the Xbox Game Pass. For PC, it has over 100 games available currently, with 75 developers already signing on for it. In addition, you're looking at $4.99 a month during beta if you're looking at just the PC version, or you can do the ultimate version if you have an Xbox console as well. That's going to be the PC Game Pass, the console Game Pass, and Xbox Live Gold for $14.99 a month. I would argue this is the best deal in gaming, personally. I've already bought the Ultimate Pass. In fact, there is a little life hack to it. If you go ahead and prepay Xbox Live up to 3 years, you can actually get Game Pass for $1 for all 36 of those months if you do the Ultimate Edition. So I did lock that in. So I have about, it's going to be about $1,000 value is what I added up for $51. So I'm quite excited.
Joey with the life hacks coming here at the Level Up podcast. I like that, Joey. You know, it was funny. One of my friends actually told me about that also. Like, he was like, "Oh yeah, dude, this awesome deal. You buy 3 years of them." I was like, "Yeah, I guess that sounds kind of cool." But you know, like, look, Joey, I will agree with you. I agree with you. This is the best deal in gaming. $4.99 during beta. $14.99 if you own an Xbox console also, and you have a PC that you can play games on as well. All that plus Xbox Gold, you know, that is such an amazing deal. And you use the life hack too, Joey. There's nothing that comes close to this. And we opened up the show talking about Stadia, and we're talking about everything else. We're talking about the developers all having their own, you know, monthly pass for the games and you know, from their studios and everything. And now here Xbox is kind of doing that Netflix idea for the same price as essentially Netflix. If you have a console, if you have a PC, and you want Xbox Live Gold, I mean, $14.99 a month, that is still a very reasonable asking price, and I feel like it's a steal. It's a steal. You have over 100 games already available for the PC. 75 developers already signed on. If you've been sleeping under a rock, Microsoft has been absolutely killing it in the poaching department, taking developers, producers, entire studios, bringing them into the Microsoft family. Absolutely killing it. Like, for $14.99, the the way this could expand in the future, the way that this could become literally like the one-stop shop for gaming, for console and PC, is putting a lot of people on notice. There's so much hype around this. And Joey, you know me, I'm a Sony fanboy here. I'm a PlayStation fanboy. This is massive. Like, if I'm Sony, I'm sitting here going, oh. Well, not only did we not show up to E3 this year, not only has Xbox and Microsoft been acquiring everyone who made exclusives for us constantly and the talented people behind those exclusive contents, but now we have the Netflix of video games coming out essentially under Xbox. What are we going to do? Sony, you're on the clock, my dude. Like, that is rough. And yeah, Joe, I haven't done it yet. I'm going to be buying the pass also. I have a PC. I think the Xbox app sucks. I haven't gotten the update yet. So until I get that update for the Xbox gaming app, it still sucks. But even then, I feel like $4.99 a month can justify a sucky app like that. For 100 games and more to come, give me a break. That's such a steal.
The best deal in gaming, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, by far. When you look at it, my biggest question was, what is the split for the developers? How much money does John putting in title A get back? And really, I don't think the split is that much on all these subscribers. But if you look at it, and one of the reasons a lot of developers are citing for buying into it is the exposure. Because they have so many people who would normally not play their game, who would normally not buy their game, actually playing the game. Then on top of that, you can turn around and sell them DLC. You can get a ton of Twitter followers or whatever social media followers for your games. And then from there, you can expand your studio. You can get more well-known. You can even sell out and have Microsoft pay you more money to buy out your studio. Like, there are so many different ways to grow from that. So I've had it for about a week now. I've already downloaded 3 games I would have never touched or bought before. 3 are ready. I mean, that to me, and to have it for 3 years, I can only imagine the different games that I'm going to touch that I would have never played before. So I really think as a developer, I don't know if you're making a ton of money off of it, and obviously there's tons of people who are not on there, and some developers will choose maybe to only put it on Xbox or only on PC as opposed to the other. So there are options for developers too, or how long they keep it in Game Pass. All games are not in Game Pass permanently. So if a game was on Game Pass, you get a discount at buying it full if you want. On top of that, all Xbox games will always be in Game Pass if they're made from all these Xbox studios. But if you want to make this is just a throw game out there, Final Fantasy VII, if you want to throw it up on Game Pass for a month and people buy into it and love it, then you might get sales at a 20% discount. Or you might have people like me who would not play that game normally just because of time constraints say, hey, it's free on here for a month, I might as well try it. So I think developers will do really well with this pass. It's been out for... I feel like it's been on Xbox for at least a year at this point, and it's just been doing extremely well. They have so many subscribers, now coupling it with Xbox Live, giving a PC addition to it. I really think this thing that the sky is the limit, to be completely honest. In addition to that, if you like Double Fine Productions, one of the oldest studios out there, they've been around for, it's since 2000, I think, about 19, 20 years. They've been around for quite a while, big games under them, Psychonauts being one of their biggest ones. They announced Psychonauts 2, as well as the fact that they were acquired by Xbox Game Studios, which brings it up to about, I want to say like 15 studios at this point. Age of Empires was another one that they've acquired or started to create as a studio. So 15, 16, right around that range is what we're looking at for the Xbox Game Studios. And John, this is from just about last year. Previous to that, I believe they had Mojang, maybe one other studio. It's been very few, like 2 or 3 starting out. Now we're up to 15 in a year's time. That to me is incredible. Xbox is not done yet. They've already said they want to get a Japanese studio as well. So I expect many, many moves from Microsoft still to come, especially in the studio buying acquisition department. But on top of that, Psychonauts 2. We haven't seen a Psychonauts game in a long time. A fan-loved game. It really has a cult following to it. Now we have number 2 coming out. Moving from the Game Pass and Double Fine Studios, we have Project Scarlet. I'm excited for this, but I was disappointed with the way Microsoft revealed it. They had a really cool reveal video with developers talking about it, with engineers talking about it, about the new AMP processor. We're going to see the latest Zen 2 and Radeon RDNA architecture from AMD. It was not just AMD developing this technology. It was actually Microsoft and AMD building this together, which is very different than we've seen before, as usually it's one guiding the other, but it actually had both engineers working on this one. We're going to see it paired with high bandwidth GDDR6 memory and a new generation solid state drive that's supposed to surpass everything we've seen so far in that technology. I'm super excited about this. Really good refresh rates. It's going to have one of the highest capabilities of ray tracing we've seen in consoles yet. I think it's going to be the best console out there, the strongest, the most capable of any console we've ever seen before. At the same point, they really held their cards on this one, John. We didn't see anything of what it's going to look like. We didn't see any processing of what that could look like. Again, it's still about a whole year out, almost a year and a half at this point. But they did kind of hold their cards back on this one.
Yeah, they're kind of teasing it a little bit. They're kind of showing you the guts a little bit. They're letting you know, hey, look, this is something we're working on. And just to show you how much of an improvement this is going to be over the Xbox One, let's tell you a little bit about the processor, about how much, you know, memory we're going to give it, you know, what it's going to be capable of. Let's throw some numbers at you just to get you a little excited here. What's really interesting is really AMD's been killing it when it comes to gaming in general. Their PC line has been absolutely phenomenal in the past 2-3 years. AMD considered second fiddle to Intel for so many decades when it came to processors and just anything CPU related, anything computer related. AMD was like second fiddle. Now, statistically speaking, they outperform Intel's i9 for like $300 less. It is a steal. Xbox is now using an AMD processor, which I believe they've used AMD for quite a while. Sony's used AMD for quite a while as well. So it's kind of interesting. AMD is really the guts of these next two consoles in this next generation of console wars. That's going to be interesting coming up, having this one company doing both consoles. But that kind of shows you both companies are going along the same kind of lines here, looking for something interesting here, looking for something on the next level. And they realize they don't have to go to Intel anymore. They don't have to pay premium dollar anymore to get this technology. AMD's caught up and surpassed Intel, and Intel's kind of limiting what they can and can't do. They're afraid to think outside the box. They're afraid to do something that they are going to take a gamble on. They want to play it safe, and they played it too safe, and now AMD's right there, knocking on their door. Some people would argue ran past them, and now they're going to be powering the next generation of consoles. Amazing. Great story for AMD. And so far, so good. It may not have been a stellar teaser or release for the next console, but to a number nerd like myself when it comes to the insides of the console, that's exciting to me. That is massive for the next generation of Xbox console.
Right. And as much as people are hating on them, not saying all the stuff, not giving more of a clear picture of what they're bringing to the table, I completely understand where Microsoft is coming from. Sony was not at E3. Why am I going to show my biggest competition exactly what I'm building? So to me, that's why we're only seeing some numbers being thrown out here as far as the insides of the Xbox. We don't know the design. We don't really know what its full capability is yet outside of putting some of these parts together. That is why, to me. Why show everyone everything ahead of time? Go next year's E3, about 6 months out from the console release, show it all then. Make it a big deal. People have criticized you in the past for going too heavy on showing hardware. That's why you showed a ton of games this year. Next year, your games are going to be super exciting exclusives that no one has seen yet from studios like The Initiative, from Playground Games, from Turn 10. There's so much more in development that they're going to be able to show next year in addition to this console. So you're not showing as much of these indie games or stuff that doesn't excite people as much. Some of these indie games look sick, though. But overall, you're going to show these big exclusives, these AAA, these quadruple A from the Initiative exclusives that will be coming to your console and PC, as well as showing off the console itself. So I think it's a good move by them. In addition, one I would have liked to see a little bit more of, but I heard the demos were killer, was console streaming and Project xCloud. So they are very much going with the theme they started last year. Play the games you want on the devices you want whenever you want. Gamers will have the ability to stream games from their Xbox One console to a mobile device starting in preview this October. That's a big move for me. We already see it. I want to say PlayStation, you can stream to your computer or something along those lines. Sony's been ahead of that game. Microsoft now taking it a step further and allowing it on phones as well. I think that's going to be a really good move by them. In addition, Project xCloud will be another service out there that will allow gamers to stream games from Microsoft data centers as well. So if you don't have an Xbox or you want gaming PC graphics, but you don't have the ability to buy a PC that can run certain games, now you can use Microsoft's data centers. I don't know what the cost on that's going to be. I believe it might be rolled into the Ultimate Game Pass, actually, maybe at a higher cost, but it might be rolled into that from the sound of things. That's going to allow people to do that. So if you are from a poorer area, or maybe you just cannot afford a PC at the level to run certain games, this might be the answer to that problem. You can run it on a TV. You can run it on a console. There'll be so many different options for you to stream these data from data centers. The demo they had at E3 is supposedly one of the best demos they had there as far as technology went. It supposedly killed it. The very, very little latency there. And on top of that, they were streaming from something, I want to say it's 400 miles away. I don't have that in here. But I want to say it was a super, super far away data center that was streaming at so low latency. So I'm really excited for this technology. Again, I think this is going to kill Google Stadia if the path stays as it is. Google is competitive, though. I can see Google really bumping it up in these last few months before they get their product shipped out. At the same point, Microsoft's a giant. Microsoft is really one you have to put your boxing gloves up against to play against. So I'm excited to see how both these technologies go. I do like the fact we see two of them, John. I think competition breeds good things. We've seen it for years with Microsoft and Sony going back and forth in different areas. I think we'll see the same thing here with Google and Microsoft and their streaming services. At the same point, it's not xCloud, but it is the Azure cloud. And with the Azure cloud that Microsoft is running off of, they already have Sony and Nintendo buying into it as well. That, to me, is a huge win for Microsoft. And I feel like, I think we talked about this an episode or two ago, but it's almost like the gaming companies that have been around for so long are buying in together and almost making this little alliance in cloud gaming up against big competitors like Google. And then we'll move on to the Xbox Elite Wireless Controller Series 2. We don't have to spend too much time on this thing. New, improved controller. This thing is sexy, about as sexy as controllers get. Rubberized grips, shorter hair trigger locks. John, if you want to change the adjustable tension on your thumbstick, you can now do this on this crazy price controller. In addition, it also has 40 hours of rechargeable battery life. If you're talking controllers, whether it be for PC or for the console itself, it does not get better than the Elite Controller 2 here, and it's wireless on top of all things. So this sucker is a beast. This controller feels like it probably is going to be about as high technology as my old phone is. But yeah, this thing looks gorgeous.
So how much does a sexy controller cost, Joey?
I actually don't know if we know a price. Let me search this sucker on Google here, the Google Stadia.
Google Stadia. Good luck with the lag.
We are running at $179. Coming out November 4th of this year.
Oh, my gosh. Almost $200 for a controller? I'm good.
I mean, okay. Wait a minute here. You have to take a look at this beast quick. I'm right there with you. I'm not going to buy this thing. But take a look at that link I just put here. I can post this in chat. Or would you mind posting that in chat?
That actually isn't bad. It's fair enough.
I mean, it looks nice. It's going to be a nice controller. And if you're someone who's aspiring to be a pro, in particular in... whether it be like a Rocket League that you can use controller on PC, or whether it be you really want to go for a console gaming pro for those few games that still rely on console for their pro scene, this is almost a necessity at that point. There's just so much you can do between the latency, the sticks, the trigger hairs. It's just there's so much precision that you can really customize to you, the player. So if you're really wanting to step up your game, if you're just looking to crush some noobs in Fortnite, I probably wouldn't recommend this high level of a controller. But if you're looking to grind the ranked ladder to get up as high as you can in competitive, and you can afford putting an investment of $200 into a controller, this thing would definitely be worth it.
Oh, but it comes with a carrying case that you can stick the charging cable through to charge it while it's in the case so you don't lose it, and you got different thumb pads and things to tweak it. And I'm not paying $200 for no damn controller, Xbox. It's not happening. That is ridiculous.
I mean, it's a very expensive controller.
It's a good-looking controller, don't get me wrong. But damn, I'm not paying $200.
You almost went cross-eyed there.
Your console is going to cost $600-$700 already. I'm not paying another $200 for a freaking controller. I thought $60 was too much. For a freaking controller. Like, I remember, like, when, like, you know, on PlayStation 2, the freaking controllers were like $49.99. Then PlayStation 3 came out and they're like, can we get away with $59.99? I'm like, I'm going to try not to. But then I ended up giving it excited. But now, like, $69.99 or even $75 for, like, the limited edition camo versions. It's absolutely, I'm not paying $200 for a damn controller. I can pwn noobs on the basic controller also. Come on.
Okay, diving a few into these Microsoft games, they showed 60 games. We do not have time to go over every single one of these games, so we're just going to pick a few out that really we thought were really cool games or interesting games that really caught our attention, or games that were just super out there. Kicking things off, Age of Empires Definitive Edition. We have Age of Empires coming back. This is Age of Empires 2, celebrating its 20th anniversary. I'm a huge Age of Empires fan. I thought that was one of the most fun RTS games out there. I would give it like more of a realistic StarCraft approach to it. Almost, we could really dive into time. Not quite a civilization, not quite as in depth, but it does bring that RTS as opposed to turn-based elements to the game. I'm super stoked about this one. I think it'll be really exciting. I believe it is coming to PC. I do not know if it's coming to Xbox or not.
Let me see here. Microsoft Store, Steam, Xbox Game Pass for PC. It looks like it will be a PC only. I believe the original game was PC also only. But I'm right there with you, Joey. Age of Empires was a game I absolutely loved. With me, like, I like the RTS aspect of it, but I also like the history behind it. You got to play through some amazing historical scenarios that you got to study in school. And being a history nerd like myself, it was really cool. You know, you got to play the Ottoman Empire. You got to go through and, do the conquests on Jerusalem as Saladin and his followers and everything. And it was really cool. And it brought history to life in a fun way that, like, as a kid, you're sitting here like, oh, yeah, I'm poning noobs. But really, you were learning history. It was one of those tricky games. But it was fun. I loved the game. And that was definitely one of the ones that stood out to me, too.
Okay, Battletoads, Rare's next game in here.
The meme that keeps on giving.
Okay, they teased this last year, and supposedly people are hyped about this game. I never played the original. I do not see me wanting to play this. I mean, if it's on Game Pass, I might download it just to see what the hype's about. But maybe chat knows something I don't, but I am not super stoked for Battletoads, as it appears like so many people are.
No.
Not quite there for me. Battletoads. So, unforgettable characters with surprising gameplay challenges, all with a huge emphasis on cooperative play. So maybe if we drink enough, John and I will play some co-op Battletoads here in the near future.
No.
But for now, probably not.
No.
One that did stick out to me that's going to be Xbox and PC exclusive is Bleeding Edge. This is Ninja Theory's next game. So we saw Senua's Sacrifice come out. Really, really popular game that's really killed it. Ninja Theory in general has been one of the coolest studios in the last decade. Bleeding Edge is kind of going to be your next online team multiplayer game that's in a style of, I would say, like Overwatch meets Team Fortress 2 type of style. It's going to be a 4v4 game. Very edgy. It has a very much like almost like post-Armageddon feel to it, kind of edgelord. It's hard to describe. You really need to check out the trailer for this one. Very unique looking characters and fighters with some very cool abilities coming to the table. This is one, John, I could see some actual esports potential in. Again, it could be a little too edgy for a mainstream audience, but at the same point, I think the competitiveness, the abilities are really there to make it a good esports title if they wanted to. But again, I don't know if this is something you'll see on an ABC.
It's interesting. I do see the esport potential in it. I do see it's... How did we compare it before the show, Joey? We said it was like the graphics of Team Fortress 2, but the play style of an Overwatch. And granted, yes, I understand Team Fortress 2 and Overwatch have an incredible amount of similarities between the two of them, but that's really a solid way to describe it. The graphics aren't as smooth and cartoony as you find in Overwatch. They're kind of more... I don't know what you would call Team Fortress 2 when it comes to their graphics, but it definitely has that more realistic cartoony feel to it, maybe a little more exaggerated versus Overwatch, which is a little more human-esque where they try to make it look normal, but it's still a cartoon.
It's hard. It's hard to describe. It's kind of like flashier in a sense.
But the gameplay from the previews, it has potential. Now, in a world where... it feels like, another, FPS or another MOBA or another title coming out for esports. It feels like it's going to get saturated even more and more and more. How many more games can we pump into the professional esports scene and still have a high level of play? How many people are going to be able to split their time between 18,000 different esports games? Are they going to be able to watch them all? Are they going to stick to one, two, or three? What are they going for? The game itself looks interesting, and it's interesting enough that I'll probably give it a shot. I do see the esport potential in it, but I do have to question where in the world of esports does this really fit in, and its long-term longevity, if you will, with this game. If it does go that route, if it does go esport, how is it going to survive? We've seen a lot of games that were popular that had a large player base not make it as an esport title. Bleeding Edge has possibility, and I'm curious to see what it does when it does come out.
Yeah, to me, this hits the audience that really likes Gears of War and Overwatch. I feel like it has that edgy, mature feel that we see from Gears of War at times, especially that gore aspect that Gears of War brings. It's definitely a mature title, but it has shown that it can be successful in the esports industry. Again, it's not a Dota 2, it's not a League of Legends, it's not Overwatch, but it does pull in a good audience. It does pull in that consistency that we saw in Halo in the past, and maybe in the future. But overall, I think there's potential here. But again, I don't think this ever goes mainstream. I don't think this is the type of title you'll ever see on a Turner Broadcast Network, that you'll ever see really on ABC, Disney, like we're seeing some of these other titles like in Overwatch League make it onto. This to me is just a little too edgy for that, but I think it is a great addition from Ninja Theory. This is not the only game they're working on. They are working on their single player specialty, but they did want to throw something different out there. This is going to be an exciting new IP to watch. Borderlands 3, another popular game. We will touch on that one later in the show, though. Everyone is super hyped for Borderlands 3. The biggest part of it coming out with Xbox is the fact they added all the other Borderlands games to the Xbox Game Pass. I believe that is on console and PC that they added those. So that was one of the big reasons we saw Borderlands, without the fact that it is one of the biggest exciting games of this particular conference. Let's go ahead and hit on Cyberpunk 2077 here. This one, again, shown on a few different briefing stages, but it definitely made its biggest impact here from CG Projekt Red on the Xbox stage. A lot of that coming out with Keanu Reeves showing that he is going to be in the game and coming out on stage as well.
Yeah, and having a digital version of himself in-game that had the internet oh so thirsty. I feel like for a game that was, you know, it wasn't brought to the world for the first time ever at E3. Like, we've known about Cyberpunk. We've seen gameplay of it before. But my goodness, did they make a huge impact at E3. I'm excited for this game. I was excited for it before E3. After E3, I am so ready for this game. Keanu Reeves being in it, just the graphics, the way he looked, the way graphics have come together in the last 10 years has been absolutely freaking incredible. It's absolutely absurd. Like, if you go back to the early, well, not early, but the late 90s, maybe the early 2000s, compare the graphics of games then. Let's fast forward 15, 16, 17, 18 years and see how far they have come in such a short amount of time. Holy crap. Cyberpunk is a prime example of what graphics in the 21st century looks like. The gameplay looks amazing. The idea behind it is fantastic. The colors pop. This storyline, I've heard from the people that have saw the Behind the Doors 1 hour gameplay, said it was fantastic. The open world idea behind it, playing as a mercenary outlaw, just there's so much content. There's so much there. I want to play this game now, Joey. I want to hack in to the servers and download this game and play it right now.
Right, and this is going to be one of your biggest games. A lot of people voting this the best game of E3 this year. It's very exciting. We saw a lot last year. We dove even farther in this year. And supposedly, we haven't really seen a lot of the systems that are in play with the game either. We've seen a lot of not real gameplay elements, but really more of the storyline, a lot more of the cutscene aspects as opposed to the actual in-game play. So I'm excited to see that as we get closer down the road for this game. Again, there's so many games to go through from this Xbox showcase. Just a few more here. Gears 5, we really won't hit on. They showed a new escape mode, which looks really cool for a multiplayer mode. You can try to escape from certain areas, and you'll even be able to build your own. And if you can beat them, as difficult as you make them, you can share them with other people. We'll dive more into Gears 5 probably later on because it will be a big game at Gamescom as well. Let's see. Lego Star Wars, we're getting the Skywalker saga. I'm super stoked for that. John, one that will hit you is Microsoft Flight Simulator. That one looks really cool and is one of those games that I think is really going to capitalize on the potential of Game Pass.
Yeah, this game I wasted a lot of my childhood on. I think flying is fascinating. I love flying. I even have my own pilot certificate. There you go. Fun fact of the day. I think it's great. I think that they haven't done anything with this since Microsoft Flight Sim X, which was over 10 years ago. It's a game that is in desperate need of a refreshment. There is a huge population that plays that game. That's one that definitely popped out to me. Joey, another one that popped out to me too, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Ori is such an amazing game. If you want to talk about a game that has amazing graphics that can really suck you into the lore and the story of the game, look no further than Ori. The sequel to Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. That's another one that really stuck out to me as well. That Sea of Thieves was really cool. We talked about the Fallen Order for Star Wars. Those are really the big ones I took away, Joey.
A couple more to throw in there. Minecraft Dungeons. Neither one of us are big Minecraft players. I do think Minecraft Dungeons will be one of the most successful Xbox games to date. Really games in general from the Xbox Game Studios, with Minecraft being on just about every platform available. It's a huge type of thing, but now you're throwing a dungeon mode in there. Bring that Diablo-esque factor to it. You're allowing people to dungeon dive, build their own dungeons. I think this is going to be one of the most successful expansions we've ever seen to any game to date. So keep your eye on that one if you are a Minecraft person. Forza 4 added a cool expansion with Legos. That's kind of awesome, too. A couple more. Elden Ring. This was one of the coolest games, most ominous games we saw at the showcase as well for E3 this year from From Software and Bandai Namco. Elden Ring is going to be your Miyazaki plus George R.R. Martin game. This is going to bring the elements of Miyazaki's universes with Dark Souls combined with what we've seen in Game of Thrones as well with George R.R. Martin. This could be one of the coolest games we see in the next generation of consoles. Again, not much really shown on this one so far, but Elden Ring is definitely one to keep an eye on. Let me see what else. Cool one. I got a few more here. Outer Worlds. This was arguably one of the best games at E3 by a lot of people. I believe it actually won the most awards from developers and magazines. Outer Worlds is going to come from Obsidian. We saw it first last December. This is going to be coming out, I believe, pretty soon. I want to say it's this fall. But that game is going to be first on Game Pass as well on day one. Definitely going to be one of the coolest games out there. A lot of people are saying it is like Fallout meets Mass Effect. And I think we're going to say last but not least on this one, check out Halo Infinite. We did not see any gameplay on this one, but we did see more of a trailer. Master Chief is back. I think this is going to be the biggest Microsoft game we've seen released yet. Again, Minecraft Dungeons as an expansion could beat it. But as far as base games with Halo now being on PC as well, I think this is going to be one of the coolest ones. And last but not least, last shout out, if you have not seen the trailer for it, check out 12 Minutes. This is going to be an indie game coming out. And it's about playing out a whole game that the storyline takes place in 12 minutes. It's got a really, really cool aspect, jumping between time lapses, and it is definitely one worth checking out. The trailer's super short, but it has a really cool art style with a top-down view. And again, the whole game takes place in 12 minutes. So there's just really, really cool loops to that game and different time elements that are very unique to what we've seen so far in games today. So definitely check that one out from Microsoft. With that, let's head on to Bethesda as this show rolls on. It's a long one, so grab your drinks, head to the bathroom if you need to, but we're going to kick it off with Bethesda. We're sorry this show is going long, but Bethesda apologized enough for all of us in their conference. It felt like every time they brought up a new game, they apologized. Fallout 76 getting the most apologies. They are sending out the Wastelanders update in that one. It's going to be a new and free expansion, which will bring the traditional Fallout-style NPCs to the game, complete with dialogue, something that should have been in that game from the beginning. Again, one of the reasons Bethesda apologized there. That's what people played Fallout for. They love the NPCs, they like the weapon combinations, but they want to bring those weapons to the NPCs. They want to see the interactions. Now you're getting that back. They're also adding Nuclear Winter. John, this is our next Battle Royale game, because we needed one in Fallout 2.
Please no. Stop with the Battle Royale games. The market is saturated enough. Joy, I thought the MOBA market was pretty bad. Holy crap! The Battle Royale market in the last 2 years alone has like a million different titles, and I am sick and tired of it. Bethesda, this is not how you're going to win people over on Fallout. You're not going to get people playing Fallout because you have a Battle Royale mode. And if you do get new people, it's not going to be enough to really make any dents in your wallet. I don't see this being a good tactic to save Fallout 76. The game was completely mismanaged. It's unfortunate. It's a legendary title in a long line of Fallout games. I don't go Battle Royale to try to save your game. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the move that brings him back. I do think the NBC move is going to be a big one with the Wastelanders update. At the same point, they did mess up quite a bit on that. But we've seen games rebound. Destiny rebounded. No Man's Sky has rebounded. There are definitely games that went through rough periods that have made their way back. I think Fallout could have some success. Again, I don't think it does as well as we've seen other Fallout titles do, though. We have a new IP coming out from Bethesda, Ghostwire Tokyo. This is from Miyakami, the man behind some of the best survival horror games out there, and this one's going to be a new IP set in modern-day Tokyo that will involve mysterious disappearances of people around the city. From the trailer, it is believed the foes will be inspired from Japanese mythology as well. John, I'm not a huge horror game player, but if I'm looking between this and Blair Witch, I'm almost a bit more excited for this one. Again, it's not a super unique atmosphere, but it is bringing from some of the most popular horror games we've ever seen.
Yeah, the idea behind it sounds cool, and I'll make you, Joe. I'm not too big into horror games. But there's potential here. And I know a lot of horror game fans are excited for this title. I'll check it out. I'll watch a few streams on it. I don't know if I'll buy it, but the idea behind it does sound interesting enough that I will spend time watching and kind of diving a little bit more into it.
And sticking with your piloting there, we have Wolfenstein Cyberpilot coming out, a VR experience that will take players taking control of Nazi machines and vehicles to kill Nazis. Doesn't sound like my type of game, but hey, Wolfenstein Cyberpilot. The Wolfenstein game that I find more interesting is Youngblood, and that will be set in the 80s, a sequel to the previous games. The game will play as a cooperative arcade shooter style game where two players take on the role of BJ's daughters as they fight through Paris, a Nazi-infested Paris. That one's a bit more exciting for me, and that one launches on July 26th on all consoles and PC.
The only thing I want to touch on when it comes to Wolfenstein is I hate how Wolfenstein and Call of Duty have gone down this road now, where they both went absurd in the futuristic version of their games. You had Modern Warfare Bajillion, whatever it came out, and it was so unrealistically stupid that a lot of people, you're like, okay, cool, but it's not what made Call of Duty Call of Duty. Call of Duty made its name on World War II. I know it you can only do it so much. Wolfenstein, when you go back to Wolfenstein 3D, when you go back to the original Wolfenstein, that was a classic. That literally was a catalyst in the first-person shooter game genre. I believe it was the first person shooter available to play. And it was such a unique aspect. You were breaking out of a Nazi dungeon, essentially in a castle, and you go through and you take down the Third Reich from the inside. Yeah, they had a mutant level. Yeah, there was some like cool little like rocket launchers and kind of stuff like that later on in different episodes and Wolfenstein 3D that came out. But now all of a sudden we have not Nazi zombies. We have UFOs and these other futuristic cyborg Nazis that, you know, look, it's to me, Wolfenstein, this entire series has been absolutely demolished, has been broken down. I'm not excited about either one of these. And as a hardcore old school Wolfenstein fan and Call of Duty fan, I feel like both studios have done an incredible disservice to the game that essentially created two major gaming genres. And it irritates me that we keep going down this futuristic cyber Nazi BS with these new games. Like it drives me up a wall. Out of the two, I agree with you. I think Youngblood has more of the potential, but both of them, to me personally, trash. Hated both of them.
And moving on to the highlight of Bethesda's show is their blockbuster title of the showcase, Doom Eternal. It's going to take on an arcade-style approach with lots of suite and power-ups baked into the design. The newest announcement regarding the game was the game's new multiplayer battle mode. This one is going to see two players take on the roles of the various demons in the game, while a third plays as the Doom Slayer. The two demons have to work together to kill the Slayer while he does his utmost to kill the demons. John, very basic play there, but it is a cool style being implemented into the Doom franchise. Doom Eternal is set to release on November 22nd. Again, I think this will be the biggest game for Bethesda, at least coming out this year. This is a huge one. Doom has a huge following. It did really well with the recent reboot. Now coming out with Eternal, I think it does just as well. Orion, last but not least, this one is not a game, but Bethesda filled us in on their latest entry into the streaming market, and that is Orion. Still a lot of details to come on this one. We don't have too much out there yet, but Bethesda claims that it will make streaming platforms far more capable of playing games with minimal lag. So really, Orion, it almost feels like, is going to be a system implemented with some of their games that may help it implement better with a Google Stadia, with a Microsoft Project xCloud. It might even be its own standalone. I'm really not 100% sure on that, but look for more details on Orion in the months to come. Okay, John, take us to the PC gaming show. I did not get a chance to watch this one.
Yeah, so you didn't miss anything. This one was also about 2.5 hours long. Granted, they did cover quite a bit of games. The one big takeaway, there's a lot of great indie titles coming out. Nothing too major from any major studio, but there are some cool games that are coming out. Really, none of them really stood out in the sense of like, oh my gosh, I want to talk about them for 5 minutes. But just an idea of some of the cool things that are coming out there. Planet Zoo, it's a zoo simulator. I know I make fun of Farming Simulator all the time. Zoo Simulator is kind of right there with Roller Coaster Tycoon, and where it's like you build an amusement park, you build a zoo, and you can kind of go out and capture these animals. The graphics are incredibly well done. They do have a realistic feel to it, so it's not cartoony like some of these other simulators are. It's an overall wholesome game. You know, it's not, you know, you're not going to feed guests to the lion or the tigers in the lion tiger pit, but you know, it's kind of cool. That was one of the games that kind of stood out to me. The other thing that had a huge backlash in this segment of E3 was the Epic Store. And shocker, Joey, the Epic Store pissed people off. Who would have thought? mainly around the long-awaited and highly anticipated game. I'm going to slaughter the name. I apologize. Is it Shenmue 3? Shenmue 3? I listened to that name like 15 different times, and I still can't get it down.
Shenmue?
Shenmue. Oh, boy. So bad. So I apologize. I completely destroyed that. But this game, it's been in the making for a while. There's a lot of fanfare around it. And now it came out that it's an Epic Store exclusive. So a lot of players who have all their library on Steam, everywhere else than Epic, it's going to be an Epic exclusive for a year. That pissed a lot of people off. And Epic's been kind of doing this quite a bit where they're buying the exclusive rights. We talked about Rocket League. That one's being, you know, that one has a huge the community up in an uproar. So now there has been so much backlash since that E3 announcement. The developers are actually listening to the community, and they're going to reassess what's going on. So they may actually back out of that exclusive deal because the backlash has been that intense since that announcement. Two other things that brought chat to life a little bit. A new gaming chair was announced because gaming chairs are a dime a dozen, it feels like. And Samsung announced a new 27-inch curved gaming monitor with a 240Hz refresh rate. This thing is absolutely beautiful. It's probably going to cost you about $999, the same price as the Apple monitor stand. So if you're looking at the new iMac coming out, the standalone for the monitor will cost you $1,000. Probably the same amount for this beautiful monitor that comes with a standard, with a stand as well. Those are two other big things from that segment in E3. But other than that, if you're into indie titles, definitely check out the PC Gaming Show. It was really kind of cool, some of the new titles that are coming out there.
Moving on to the Ubisoft briefing, we have Uplay Plus, John, because you love subscription services and you want a worse value than Xbox Game Pass. You can now get it with Uplay Plus. Ubisoft goes premium with this service, announcing a $15 a month fee on this one. Again, I think they're right in line, though, with what we're seeing. EA already has this on their Origin client, now Ubisoft jumping in as well. Honestly, I find Ubisoft's a little bit more intriguing even because of the game titles they offer compared to something like an EA games currently. Unless you're really into those sports games and want to play them on PC's Origin, then maybe that one is the way to go. But again, we're getting to that point where it feels like almost every developer is going to release these at some point. It's going to be in that $10 to $15, maybe even $20 range for premium. Again, I think there's so much more value with Game Pass personally. But if you're playing a lot of Ubisoft games, you want to go for that monthly subscription. It is now available for you.
I feel like
Go ahead.
I feel like what we're going to see people rotate these subscriptions. You know, where a couple months they're going to play the Ubisoft games, then they're going to cut their subscription off. They're going to move to a different studio, pick up that pass, play through those games. Because a lot of these games don't really have a lot of replay factor. There are a lot of, you know, single play through. You know, you play a story. They don't have alternate endings. They don't have different choices. They're just, single playthrough. Like, how many times can you play through Assassin's Creed? How many times can you play through The Division? It's somewhat kind of limited in what you can and can't do. So I feel like we're going to see people rotate these subscriptions through. But for $14.99 a month for some of the titles that you get in Ubisoft's platform here, I think that alone is worth that. But I wouldn't say that alone as your main gaming subscription would be a good overall cost.
Right, and I think that's one of the big things that Ubisoft has up on these other companies right now. So you're looking at certain single-player games that, like you said, you can only play through a certain amount of times, but you have Rainbow Six Siege on here as well, a very, very popular title. It's still killing it today. It's been out for years. Ghost Recon is another one you can play over and over again. The Division 2, there's so much content where you can keep going over and over and just grinding for more and more loot and gear as they keep adding expansions there. So they do have titles out there that I think make this capable. At the same point, do I want to spend another $15 a month on a gaming service when I can only play a certain amount of games anyway? I don't know. I feel like League of Legends being free is really nice. Apex Legends, Fortnite. There are so many other free options out there already. Even like in Overwatch, you had to pay for it, but there's so much room to really grind and compel yourself in that game. So for me, I just don't know if I really want to add another subscription on for me personally. Let's talk Watch Dogs Legions, though. This is one of those games that you might want to get the subscription for if you don't buy it outright. This is the next installment in the Watch Dogs franchise. It will be set in London post-Brexit, and the game will be moving away from its former solo protagonist style. This is one of the coolest things for me, John. It honestly blows my mind. It's one of the coolest features at E3. You'll be able to recruit and play as nearly every citizen in the city. This one's set to release in late March, but the fact that they're really designing the characters that in-depth, the ability to really get to know characters on a different level, it almost like they take something like a Mass Effect or Fallout style, but embrace it to every character and allow you to play as them to really get to know these characters on a different level. That's just a whole nother level of character design we've never really seen before with NPCs.
And on top of that, they're introducing permadeath too. So that's kind of the uniqueness here, that when you can play as any citizen that you kind of recruit to your cause, that is a feature of the game that you need to do, because if you die, that character that you were playing as, permadeath. You can't get that character back. There is no respawn. That's a very unique aspect that some games have used in the past, but still kind of a rare tactic used in games to this day. So that's something that was really, really interesting, that when I heard that coming out for Watch Dogs, that really got me intrigued. So you can recruit the citizens, but you also have permadeath. So that's going to add a different challenge in there as well.
Speaking of permadeath, Rainbow Six Quarantine, if you catch the virus, you could be permanently dead as well. Rainbow Six Quarantine will function as a standalone PvE spinoff of the popular quarantine event from Rainbow Six Siege. This, to me, John, do we really need a whole nother game just for a game mode? I don't know. Like, are they really concerned that this is going to pull so many players away from the main game mode? I don't know really what they're thinking here. If they're thinking this is just going to be some crazy awesome PvE mode that needs its full standalone title, I don't see it. Maybe for a console, you need to release a whole other one because the patch will be huge. But I feel like for PC, this is just a patch for me. I don't really understand why we need a full spin-off title for it. I think it's just a little excessive in my opinion. With that being said, the mode looks really cool. It's fun. But I don't know if I need a whole other title to be purchased for this one. Moving on. So again, that's going to be a 3-player tactical co-op game where you can fight against infected monsters and humans. If you want to check that out, Rainbow Six Quarantine coming in 2020. The Division is getting new DLC. We know the second set now is going to take you to the Pentagon, where they will take on a new threat, while Episode 3 will take players back to Manhattan, where the original Division franchise took place. Now you're going all the way back there. It's going to be an exciting time. I really don't know exactly what is to come, but we do know the settings of the next two expansions. With that being said, we also have the Division movie heading to Netflix. Game movies have really never done that well. I don't expect this one to be any different.
No, they've all been bad. I think the best one was the Super Mario Bros. One. And that was terrible. It was absolutely awful.
But Prince of Persia, I think, was the best one.
But it holds a nice place in my heart because it was just that. The Goombas looked awful. It was such a horrible rendition of what the Goombas looked like. And Bowser was some angry guy with bumps on his head. It was terrible. It was scary.
You're a Goomba.
So bad.
Ghost Recon Breakpoint. This is the follow-up to Ghost Recon Recon Wildlands. It's set to have a playable beta launching in early September, with the full game coming out in early October. This looks to be another great entry in Ghost Recon. I don't feel like it's anything particularly super unique. Ghost Recon's always released solid titles. I expect this one to be no different personally. Some games I am excited for, though, we did see two new IPs coming out from Ubisoft, and that is Roller Champions. John, this is another one I see a lot of esports potential in. Potentially, we didn't really see much gameplay to it, but from the trailer, I think the idea behind the game, there is potential here. We have a team-based competitive sports game in the style of Rocket League meets Overwatch. So you're pretty much looking at characters in a roller derby setting with different class abilities and gameplay aspects that will bring a unique competitive flair to it. The game is going to feature two teams of four facing off against each other. So again, with that bleeding edge approach, two teams of four, I think that's a great number for competitive games. And again, I see a lot of esports potential here. I haven't seen the gameplay aspects, but from the trailer, something like Rocket League does very well. Roller derby, again, not a real popular sport nowadays, but it did have its time in the past. And I really think this is one way to bring traditional sports fans to esports in a more easy way to really translate things. Rocket League is very simple in the sense that if you score the ball in a goal, you get points. This will be simple in that way as well. But again, the power-ups do make things a little bit different as well. Any thoughts on Roller Champions?
No, not really. I agree with you. I do see the esport potential, but my gosh, the world has been trying to get roller derby back into the mainstream. There was a movie about it. There was some like crack league that appeared. I believe DC even had a team that played at the Armory next to RFK for a little bit. Look, I just don't see it. It might be interesting as an esport, but I don't know why people are trying to bring this game back. It just made no sense. Like, it wasn't really that popular. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it might do better as an esport than it would as a sport, to be completely honest. Another new IP, we have Gods and Monsters, ending the show for Ubisoft here. We took another look at a new IP, this one from the developers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, a very popular game out there. It looks to be an open-world action-adventure-style game where you play as a wandering warrior exploring a vast world full of ancient creatures and deities who roam the land. Something that's not super new. We feel like we get this in a lot of games where you explore and take on these crazy dragons and creatures. This one in particular, though, coming from the developers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, they have a great resume. That game's done very well and is one of the most popular Assassin's Creed games to date outside of the original. I think this will do really well. It's going to launch in February 2020, and I think new IPs, especially broad new IPs with great developers behind them, usually have a good start.
And original storylines, just like Avatar the movie. Never been done before.
I think chat wants to know if you've tried roller derby.
Have I tried roller derby? No. No, I have not. I played football. I did not play roller derby.
yeah, you and rollerblades would be quite fascinating.
I used to rollerblade. I used to play hockey, too. I was a great skater, sort of.
Okay, skater boy, with that, let's head on over to Square Enix, where a whole bunch of JRPGs were shown. You and I, not the hugest JRPG fans. We like our anime here and there, but we really don't play through every single Final Fantasy game under the sun. This one had quite a few of those. We're going to kick it off with the biggest one, Final Fantasy VII, the way they kicked the show off. This remake looks like one of the coolest titles we've seen out there to date. A lot of people labeling this as the game of the year for them at E3. You and I had a conversation about this. We like it. We think it's really cool in how they re-innovated the combat system. At the same point, it is a remake. You're getting the same story. They might change elements here and there, but we already know the first boss fight's the same. So as a remake, can you really be the biggest title of the year? Maybe the biggest remake of the year, but for us, it's not quite the biggest title, at least unless things have changed. But we are seeing this one remade after 22 years. Famous characters from Final Fantasy VII making their way back in this reworked, stunning visual new combat system. It's going to be a massive 2 Blu-ray disc worth of content game that has Final Fantasy fans watering at the mouth. That is a huge, huge game, 2 Blu-ray disc worth of content. That is a whole lot of content coming in. They're going to dive into the new combat system. They found a really cool way to marry real-time action with a style of tactical combat that Final Fantasy fans are used to. Once you build up a certain meter, it goes into slow-mo where you move into that tactical combat from that real-time combat. I think it's a really cool system, possibly one of the coolest combat systems we've seen in the last 5 years or so. I think they'll do a really good job with that one. On top of that, I think this is one of the coolest games out there from this particular conference at Square Enix. I would definitely recommend checking out the VOD if you're a Final Fantasy fan, or if you just really like the idea of games being remade with different styles, because they really revamped this combat system in a very cool way. Final Fantasy Chronicles, the remaster, is set to launch on PS4, Switch, iOS, and Android, but we do not have a date yet. Again, another Final Fantasy game. We're going to have quite a few games in that genre hitting here, and we won't spend too much time on them because you can watch the trailers if you're really excited on them. There weren't a ton of details that came out on the new essences of them, but more the games themselves and the release dates. Some other ones, The Last Remnant Remaster, now available on Nintendo Switch. This one originally came out in 2008 and is now remastered here in 2019. Circuit Superstars, this is a cool one, John. This is set to bring a fresh new spin to racing games with a top-down arcade-style view. If you haven't seen that, check that one out. It's headed to Xbox One, PS4, and the Switch in 2020. This, to me, is a really cool game. We have realistic racers like NASCAR, like F1, and then we have the fun ones like a Mario Kart. Sonic has done it in the past. There are tons of like fun power-up-based racers
Crash
as well.
Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot's another huge one. This one kind of falls in a different realm from those two. It's not realistic like a Forza or a Formula One or a NASCAR, but it's not as arcadey as the rest either. It kind of hits this, not real style graphics. They are cartoony still, but it kind of falls in that genre between the two, I would feel like. And I really like the top-down view to it. It kind of brings a new, different aspect to the racing genre as well. Whew, I need a sip of water here in a minute. Final Fantasy 14, back to Final Fantasy. This one is the online edition for those that play, kind of like the World of Warcraft of the Final Fantasy realm. They are bringing a new expansion, Shadowbringers, to the mix. The expansion promises to be quite expansive, boasting the size of a standalone RPG title. We're talking huge, huge content here coming in, John. It's going to welcome two new jobs, the Gunbreaker and the Dancer. I can see you playing as a Dancer character personally, if you want to give us a little dance there on camera, as well as two new playable races, the Viera and the Hrothgar, I believe is how it's pronounced. Again, not a huge Final Fantasy player here. This one's going to launch on July 2nd, so just a couple weeks away. But again, a huge Final Fantasy title. So many players playing this game as well. Now you get two new classes, two new races, similar to what we see with the World of Warcraft expansions when they come out with new stuff. Again, new classes, new races, those are kind of the way to go. But having the content alongside those, so you're not only getting those races, but you're getting huge, huge content. We're not talking content you're going to finish in a couple weeks unless you pretty much only play that game. We're talking content that should last you quite a while as a standalone RPG. War of Visions, the next title in the world of Final Fantasy, Brave Exvius. John, the original game here had 39 million downloads, so this is going to be another big one, I expect. It's going to treat you to the experience of conflict between the kingdoms of, here we go, Leonis, Fenaz, Wazet, Crystal Sanctum, and Horn. It's going to be a tactical role-playing game similar to what we see with the Final Fantasy franchise, very much based on tactics and building your party along with these systems. But again, diving into the lore, I think that's one of the coolest things of Final Fantasy is the deep, rich lore we have behind it. Again, like a World of Warcraft, there's so much deep and there's novels written about it. There's games out there. There's so many freaking Final Fantasy games. This is another aspect to dive into new aspects of that lore, and I think that's going to be great for fans of that series. Outriders, from the creators of Bulletstorm and Gears of War Judgment, two big games there. Very little known about this one, but it is kind of intriguing sounding, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it as well. The title is described as a dark, modern shooter with traditional values. I would love to hear what the heck that is in your opinion, but so far we know that players will create their own Outriders and journey across the planet to find a source of a mysterious signal, either with friends or as a solo player. But John, I have to ask you in chat, feel free to chime in as well. What in your opinion is a dark modern shooter with traditional values?
That is when the emos and the edgelords join forces to come together for a greater good. It's when we rise up from the shadows, we step out to save the world with our edginess and emo-ness. Using traditional values, of course. I've got nothing.
Yeah, that's a unique one for me. Then we have Ultimate Alliance Avengers Edition. I mean, Marvel's Avengers. This is going to be a four-player co-op and completely original Marvel story that watches the Avengers assemble to save the world while being viewed as murderers in the eyes of the public. Every new hero and new location will be free of cost. I think that's a big move from them here. And there will be no loot boxes, which got quite a bit of cheering. It's set to release worldwide on just about every platform on May 15th, 2020. John, the key to me is that this game had so much freaking hype behind it, but it looks just like that Marvel Ultimate Alliance game or whatever it was called that got released free on like every Xbox 360 back in the day. Obviously, the graphics have improved, but the style itself, I don't feel like it's super unique enough to really make it for me. I expected so much more.
There was so much hype around this game, and I feel like it fell flat. The graphics are terrible. They look awful. The characters... now, I understand why they couldn't put the same like face as the characters we know and love from the Marvel Cinematic Universe on there. Like, we're not going to see, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s version of Iron Man on there because then he gets paid rights for it. I understand why they did it. But they just look so awful. They look like they didn't even try to make them look anything like what we've known for the past, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, this is an entire generation that grew up watching Marvel on the big screen, and now you're going to make a video game like this. First off, video game movies struggle enough as it is. There's generally a lot of hype around these games. When the movie comes out, it's generally paired with the launch of a movie. This is coming out after Endgame. This is coming out almost a full year after Endgame. After the Avengers are done and no more in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it is now going back to independent movies with Spider-Man here or Captain America here or Thor here. They're kind of missing the boat here. And Joe, you said the graphics are terrible. It's like five steps backwards. It really missed a mark for me, and it's really upsetting because there's so much potential here. Am I going to let graphics hold this game back? Probably. The gameplay itself, I'm not too thrilled about. I thought the Spider-Man game that came out after Homecoming, I thought that was the mark. I feel like this falls short of that quite a bit. So I'm not excited for this. I think they really messed up big time on this game with the graphics, the release, everything on it. I think this fell flatter than what they expected when they announced it.
Right, it's just not unique enough. The Spider-Man game brought so much open world aspect to it and brought so many unique combat really differences that from what we've seen in other superhero style games. This just does not capitalize on that enough for me. So we'll have to see what happens. But again, not super, super stoked for this one like a lot of people hyped it up to be. We do have one briefing left to go, and then we're going to talk awards. We're going to try to keep this one under 2 hours, especially for the majority of our listeners who listen on the podcast version. Thank you to the live listeners for sticking around, those of you who have been here for an hour and a half with us here on this show. The Nintendo briefing is next up before we hit those awards, and we're going to kick it off with Smash DLC. We have the hero from Dragon Quest and Banjo-Kazooie coming in. This is good for me. Dragon Quest, not super, super excited about, but Banjo-Kazooie, I think, is bigger than a lot of people realize. A lot of people saw it coming, especially with Banjo previously being on consoles like the N64, but I think this is a deeper relationship between Microsoft and Nintendo that we're not quite seeing the full fruition of yet. We see Minecraft over there. We see a lot of Xbox games being played on Switch now as well. I think we're going to see a future where Game Pass might be available on Switch and maybe even xCloud services as well. And I think they're going to hold off a lot of that to next year's E3 when we see more of these consoles coming out as well, with like the new Xbox, Project Scarlet, when we hear more about Project xCloud as it really meets its maturation. So I expect a lot more from these two, and I think Banjo-Kazooie really hints at that and the growing partnership between those two. I also would not be surprised if we get someone from, say, like a Perfect Dark or Halo eventually making their way into Smash Brothers as a more cartoony aspect as well.
Yeah, the Banjo-Kazooie announcement was major, to the point where I literally did a lap around my office. My boss looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. That's massive. I'm not even a huge Smash player. That is a huge, huge addition to the game. I think it's fantastic. And that will probably get me to play Smash. So awesome. Great job. I love Banjo-Kazooie. One of my favorite games growing up as a kid on N64. So yeah, love it. I think it's going to be outstanding.
From the live-action Mario movie to Luigi's Mansion 3, we move this conference. It will take place in a haunted motel this time around, where you'll need to rescue Mario, Princess Peach, and various Toads. The most significant new feature coming along with this, John, is Gooigi, a goo version of Luigi that is impervious to spikes and has the ability to pass through walls. I believe it does get melted by water, though. While playing solo, the player will have the option to switch between the two, Luigi and Gooigi. But it also opens up the ability for multiplayer in a similar way that we saw Mario's hat, which was super awkward to me, open up multiplayer in Super Mario Odyssey. I actually did not play it in a co-op aspect. I don't really find the fascination of playing as a hat that intriguing, nor do I find the fascination of playing as a goo version of Luigi that intriguing personally. But we'll have to see how that does in a co-op atmosphere. I do think as a single player, it does bring a fun new aspect. But again, it doesn't really intrigue me to say, hey, John, let's sit down for hours playing this game while you play as a goo version of myself. It's just not quite there for me. In addition, this will bring a special co-op mode that'll allow up to 8 people online with Luigi clones in different overall sets. And it's set to release sometime in fall, winter 2019.
Gooigi. That is so awkward.
It's haunting, isn't it?
It's bad. It's incredibly bad.
Yeah, that one, not quite my game. The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Link wakes up on a mysterious island. It seems like a theme this year. Everyone's on a mysterious island. They must collect magical instruments across the land to awaken the windfish in order to escape. I would love to see the windfish. I actually did not see the clip of him. The game will be heavily dungeon-focused, where you'll earn chambers of dungeon rooms by completing chamber dungeons. That one's a tongue twister as well. In turn, you'll be allowed to create your own dungeons and your own dungeon layouts that are really unique, and you'll be able to show them to friends, have friends play through those dungeons as well. It's set to release on Nintendo Switch on September 20th. John, I'm very curious what your dungeons will look like as you build them from these rooms.
Well, Jerry, you're going to have to wait and find out once I build these dungeons.
Hey-o.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe once you're in my dungeon, you never come out.
Okay, moving on to Animal Crossing New Horizons. John, you would never guess this. Animal Crossing, guess where it's taking place?
On a deserted island?
Ding, ding, ding. Nintendo really ran with this theme this year. The latest Animal Crossing will take place on a deserted island. You guessed it, and I'm sure chat did as well. No fear, though. Tom Nook will still be there to take your bells and overprice you for rents and everything else he sells. We did get a sneak peek of the new systems coming to the game, though, at least some of them. We're going to see crafting come to the game, as well as a more intriguing weather system, which a lot of games are really investing into, bringing more snow aspects, rain aspects, making it feel windy for the player. I think that's a really cool thing to bring to games. In addition to that, this one's behind schedule, actually, so it's going to be released in 2020, looking like March as opposed to 2019 when it was originally supposed to release. So yeah, interesting. It does have multiplayer, up to 7 other people as well. I actually really enjoyed Animal Crossing, I want to say for GameCube, maybe. I played quite a bit on it. I feel like half the game is paying off your freaking debt to a raccoon. But overall, I really like the aspect that you... I just watched you crack up on that one. I think it's really fun to really develop relationships in the game, get to know different people, build your own house, build your furniture in it. It kind of brings like a cartoony aspect of The Sims in like a weird animal world to the mix here. Animal Crossing, a huge cult classic, though. I think a lot of people will buy into this game and a lot of people will be excited. They'll be sad that it's being delayed, but I'm sure they'll be happy in the long run when it comes out as a full title.
Paying off a debt to a raccoon. Priceless. Oh my gosh.
And last but not least, closing out the Nintendo briefing for the stage and closing out our briefing section of the show, Breath of the Wild 2 teaser trailer at the end. Can I get a big yas? This sucker looks gorgeous. There are so many videos of people freaking out over this video. If you missed the conference, you'll definitely want to check out this trailer. It's short and sweet, but it does a great job. It was gifted to us right at the end. And I think it's a really good explanation of what we have to come with Breath of the Wild. No one expected it, but they've done so well. They've had so many plans for DLC that they decided, let's just roll it into a completely different game. To my knowledge, and I could be wrong, I believe this is the first sequel that we've actually gotten with the same title, with this being Breath of the Wild 2, if they do roll on with that. So that's pretty exciting outside of remakes. It looks really cool. The enemies and different aspects to it look really awesome from the short trailer we got. At the same point, is a very short trailer, but I can honestly go out on a limb and say I think this one's going to be runner-up, if not the winner of Game of the Year in the year it comes out. Anything else to touch on Breath of the Wild or Nintendo?
No, I'm good. Your Yas said everything.
Okay, without paying our debt to the raccoon, let's move on to our awards. The Missing in Action Award, we just kind of came up with these on the fly, so Chad, if you want to add some awards in, feel free to, but we're going to roll with what we got here. Missing in Action for you, John.
Sony, hello. E3's kind of a big deal here. You essentially let Xbox, who has had their leg up on you all year, continue their dominance over you. Sony, hello, anybody home? I guess not. Sony. E3, kind of a big deal. What happened?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big one. And I might be laggy for the viewers. I'm not sure. Our connection just dropped here on Discord. Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Check out the audio edition where it'll be plenty clean. Missing in Action for me, I'm going to go with the game and I'm going to say Metroid. I think it was really exciting that Nintendo brought out Breath of the Wild at the end there. But one game people are really looking forward to, and it kind of reminds me of BlizzCon last year where people really wanted Diablo. People really wanted Nintendo to show something Metroid. We didn't really get anything, and I think for me that's the big Missing in Action game. John, what about the Give Me More category? What did you want more of? Either more gameplay shown, more trailers given, more information given about a certain game that we did see, or even a developer, technology, anything like that?
So the one I really wanted, I wanted more Cyberpunk. I wanted to see, so they had a closed door game demo. It was a 1-hour game demo for certain people that were invited, and huge positive reviews that came out of it. So Cyberpunk... I want to see that gameplay. I want to see how the game actually handles. I want to be able to see it done in live real time. That's what I wanted more of. Like, I thought they did a good enough job getting people excited about this game again, getting people hyped for this game again during their announcement, releasing more information, having Keanu Reeves involved in it. Thought that was really cool. But I wanted to see more gameplay. I want to see more exclusive gameplay. That's the big thing I wanted. More of. So Cyberpunk, I needs me some more gameplay, please.
The Give Me More. I'm going to go with a different approach here. I'm going to say Microsoft. I think they gave us a ton of games, which is something they've been criticized for in the past. Am I lagging super bad?
No, I'm shocked that you're saying Microsoft. I feel like they've been giving you enough this year.
So I think they gave us a ton, but the certain aspects I wanted more of, I'm personally one of those people that would like to see more in-game play. We really didn't get that with anything. A little bit here and there, but for the most part, it was more videos of like trailer aspects or cutscenes, different things like that. I would have rather seen some hands-on demo, like especially like a Gears of War 5. It would have been great to see some in-game aspects of that. Minecraft, I think, is another one they really could have dove into. People are going to pay plenty of money for both those games anyway. Maybe that's what Microsoft is thinking too. But I would have liked more on that, and I would have liked more on xCloud. I like the fact they hid Project Scarlet details. They gave some stuff here and there. I don't want to see that yet. I'm ready for 2020 for that one. But xCloud, I would like to see an on-stage demo. Make it short. Don't make it super cheesy. And maybe that's why they strayed away from it and they just went straight 60 games. But at the same point, I would have liked to see a bit more in those two areas. The I'm Sorry Award. This one goes to Bethesda because they said it enough for everyone at the show. John, that's your default answer as well for that one. Bethesda, just too much time apologizing. EA should have been apologizing too for wasting 3 hours of our time on six games. But the coolest expansion award, what are you going with on that one?
Cool. Can I go opposite on that? Can I go with worst expansion?
Oh, sure. Go for it.
Sure. I'm going to go with everything Wolfenstein at the moment, just because I feel like no matter if it's an expansion or if it's a game that just completely bastardizes the title, look, if you're going to kill the title, kill it. Stop doing this. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think your sales of Wolfenstein are doing that well. I feel like you've lost the older generation that grew up as that being the first FPS that they were exposed to on a computer. I feel like the reincarnation of Wolfenstein in the early 2000s was borderline okay at the most. But now you've just gone down a road that's completely trash. Every reincarnation of this game you have put out, Bethesda, has been absolutely horrific. Not a fan of the way you've gone with Wolfenstein. So whether that's an expansion or not, I'm gonna call it an expansion of the title, of the lineage of the title. I hated it. Couldn't stand it. Now, on the positive side, I'm giving it to Star Wars. I cannot wait to see what happens after Order 66. That's going to be the most exciting expansion, I guess, for a gaming title. I don't know if we're talking expansion pack or expansion of a title already, but I'm going to go that way.
I like the way you took it.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to go with Star Wars for my favorite expansion, and shame on you, Wolfenstein.
I'm going to take the DLC route here. I think my runners-up are going to be The Sims and Fallout. Fallout in particular could be the change that that game needs, bringing those NPCs back into the mix. So that could end up being the biggest one here, but I'm going to go with Shadowbringers for the Final Fantasy XIV Online version. I think that's huge. Just the fact that it's almost a full-length RPG in length, I think, is really big. Yeah, the classes excite me, the races excite me as well, but the fact that you're bringing in so much content for players, I don't even play this game, but a name like Shadowbringers, the graphics, they showed us the amount of content in this expansion of why I have to give it to that one. What else we got here? The biggest surprise game. What game did you not expect at all that really came out this year?
I mean, I think you have to give this to Breath of the Wild, too. I don't think a lot of people saw this one coming. And when it came out, I mean, it hit you in the face like a brick. And you're just like, wait, whoa. You're doing what? So I have to give it to Breath of the Wild, too. That really took the entire E3 conference by storm. And I think that's the way you do it. That's the way you hold a conference. That's the punch to the gut everyone is looking for at E3. So kudos to Nintendo for that. Breath of the Wild 2 gets my vote for that one.
Yeah, I think that would actually be my vote as well, but I am going to switch it up to at least give us a second title, and I will go Bleeding Edge on this one. Bleeding Edge getting a ton of critical acclaim. It's something no one really expected from Ninja Theory. As we got closer to E3, some stuff was leaked that it could be coming out, but the fact that we see Ninja Theory, a studio that's primarily focused on single-player style games like Senua's, coming out with something that's multiplayer-based, not only multiplayer-based, but that could have esports potential as well. Bleeding Edge looks really exciting. I'm excited to learn more about these Edgelord-style characters, to really dive into the lore of the game and the atmosphere it's played in. And Bleeding Edge really took me off guard. I did not expect something like this from Ninja Theory, so I'm kind of excited to see how that all pans out. Bum, bum, bum. Let's see. The game you're most excited for in 2019.
Oh, see, this one's actually hard because right now the only thing I'm focusing on is a new expansion for Sims 4. I know it's weird, but that is going to be such a major expansion for that franchise. And, I mean, it comes out this Friday. So, I mean, it's really hard if you're a fan of The Sims and that kind of genre of gaming not to be excited for that. So I'm going to have to give that to the Island Paradise. Is it Island Paradise, I believe? Or no, Island Living. For that expansion coming out for Sims 4. That's what I'm really excited for in 2019.
The popular choice here would actually be Borderlands 3. Tons of people are excited for that. I'm actually going to go away from Borderlands 3 too, though, John. I'm going to go with The Outer Worlds. I think the next game from Obsidian, maybe it's me Microsoft fanboying a tiny bit, but this game did get some of the most, if not the most, awards from journalists and broadcasters and everything at E3. The Outer Worlds meshing up Mass Effect and Fallout just sounds like a dream to me. I think there's a ton of new aspects, and I love space games because you can really make any planet the way you want. You can really have people travel to different planets, involve themselves in new atmospheres and cultures. I really like that aspect that games can bring, and really the ability to expand the space game is also so infinite. expansions are so easy. You just throw another planet into the galaxy. And I feel like that is going to be a really cool aspect to this game as they continue to dive on from the base two expansions as well. It's supposed to be very long, too, with a ton of different culture and where choices matter. So for me, I'm going to go Outer Worlds. I believe it comes out in October of 2019.
Now, question. Remind me real quick. Watch Dogs Legion, is that coming out in 2019 or 2020?
Oh, good call. Watch Dogs
Legion. I'm double checking that right now because
I might have had that in the notes. Come on, chat, beat us to it. March 6, 2020.
Okay.
So we can roll right into our next category. Game you're most excited for in 2020.
So for me, it's a tie between Cyberpunk and Watch Dogs. I think both have incredible potential. I've been excited about Cyberpunk since it was announced. Oh, geez. What conference was that originally announced at, Joey? It's slipping my mind here.
I don't know. Was it not announced at E3?
Cyberpunk? No, it was announced before E3.
Oh, Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
No, Cyberpunk was announced first last year at E3 at the end of Xbox's briefing.
That's right. So a year ago when it was teased. So it's really hard for me not to be excited for that in 2020. But Watch Dogs looks absolutely incredible. The gameplay style where you can essentially recruit any citizen you come across to join your cause, the permadeath. Both of those titles are really kind of fighting for that one and two spot. I'm going to go ahead and give the edge to Watch Dogs just a little bit. Just the uniqueness of that game and what's been shown so far has me excited. I feel like if Cyberpunk showed a little bit more of that gameplay, like if we all got to see what was behind those closed doors for an hour, that might have taken the cake for me. But right now I'm going to give the edge to Watch Dogs for now.
I like the two you mentioned. I think Cyberpunk and Watch Dogs are great. Two more to throw out there. Ori. I think Ori has potential for Game of the Year. If it doesn't win it, it will at least be a nominee up there with games like Cyberpunk and Watch Dogs. One more to throw out there, and this one's not going to surprise anyone. It's going to be Halo Infinite. Halo Infinite comes back in 2020 in December, maybe November even. It's holiday 2020, whatever you want to count that as. It's going to launch with Project Scarlet, the new Xbox. It's going to be available on PC and Xbox and Xbox Game Pass for both on launch day. I think this is going to be one of the biggest titles we've seen yet. Again, it's not going to be a ton of creativity. I wouldn't give it Game of the Year because there's only so much you can do with a franchise that's been around for so long, and we already kind of know what we're going to get in a sense. It's going to look freaking gorgeous, but again, it's not going to bring something unique like we see with Watch Dogs probably as much. At the same point, if we're talking simply about what I'm excited to play, I'm going to play a freaking ton of Halo once that sucker launches. Game with the most esports potential at this year's E3.
I'm going to steal your thunder because I firmly bought into what you were saying with Bleeding Edge. I'm going to go and give it to Bleeding Edge. I feel like it has that ability to really capture an audience. Roller derby sounds cool. See, I even forgot it. You know, it's roller derby. It's whatever. I'm going to give it to Bleeding Edge. I feel like there's a lot of potential there. I think the 4v4 aspect is unique. So I'm going to go ahead and give them the nod for the best potential esport from E3 this year.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bleeding Edge Lords here as well. I think that's definitely the one to watch out for. Roller Champions looks exciting to me. Again, we haven't seen gameplay for it yet. Roller Champions could be one of those games that makes it out there, and I think it is a bit more family friendly. At the same point, if I'm looking at really an esport title that I'm more excited for, it's got to be Bleeding Edge here. Overall, if we're looking for family friendly esports, though, Roller Champions could be one of those ones that translates traditional sports fans over a little bit easier as well. Let's see. Best of show. What game stuck out to you the most? If we look at 2019, 2020, whether it was shown this year or last year, what was the game that really stuck out to you the most?
Watch Dogs Legions for me. I think that game is going to have, that game had a massive impact. I feel like it had a lot of positive reviews. The gameplay looked amazing. The idea behind it, the lore. I feel like that's really the one that really kind of like got everyone really hyped about E3 when it was announced. That's what I'm looking for the most. I think that is going to be the game that... Now, see, I'm also taking it this direction, too, that it had to be announced at E3 this year. Cyberpunk is still one that is like a very high number two, very close number one. For me, but again, because it was already announced, we already knew about it. That's kind of cool, but you know, I don't know, man. Watch Dogs, the idea of it being so relevant in today's world, with it being post Brexit for the UK, that is something that's in the news right now. What's the world going to be like in the UK post Brexit once that finally does go through? Are we going to have mercenaries pop up? What's going to happen? This is a cool, like kind of like a alternate history kind of game involving that. So to me, because that's all those elements into it, that really took home the best of show.
Yeah, I think I have to go the same way. If we're talking simply games released at this conference, I think Watch Dogs really is a step above. Bleeding Edge has potential again, but without really, we don't know if it has a single player game. It seems very multiplayer focused. Not having a single player, I think, does hold it back in that aspect. If we do count older shows, I think Outer Worlds and Cyberpunk would probably be the next two in line, if I had to take a guess. Breath of the Wild, though, again, I think that's another exciting game, but not enough shown. Just a trailer is not enough to give it best in game for me. I think Watch Dogs we saw the most of. It's definitely one of the most innovative games we've seen yet as well, so I do think you're right in that one. Let's talk worst showing for briefings. I'm going to kick this one off and go EA.
I will agree with you with EA.
Simply put, in much less time than they took.
Yeah.
Best of show. So looking at all of these briefings, John, overall, who really, I hate saying won E3, because I think as gamers, everyone really wins in that sense because we have so many great games coming out and pushing one another. EA definitely could take a step in the right direction, but they're not quite there yet. Best conference, though, best briefing for you.
See, this one was actually tough. I think this one was harder than the best game. For E3, I feel like Xbox, I feel like Microsoft did an amazing job. I know a lot of people were like, okay, well, you know, Joe, you even said it, you know, they kind of held back a little bit. Like, you had an opportunity to really put your foot down on Sony, but they still had an amazing conference, and they still had an amazing briefing and brought a lot to the table there. Ubisoft also put a lot on the table as well. Watchdog Legions, Rainbow Six Quarantine. They brought Uplay Plus, their subscription service, with a whole host of amazing titles that are going to be available in it. Expansions to The Division 2, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, chat's favorite roller derby game, Roller Champions was mentioned, and Gods and Monsters, while it's not an original idea of a game, sounds amazing still. The concept behind it, and the fact that the developers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey are behind it, as an Assassin's Creed fan, that gets me excited. So I'm going to go ahead and give the nod here to Ubisoft. I thought that their briefing went really well, with Microsoft a very close second behind.
Third place for me is going to be a tie between Square Enix and Nintendo. I think both games, or both briefings, I guess, showed a lot of variety, or Nintendo showed a lot of variety. I think I bounced Square Enix down a bit because of the variety. It's very JRPG heavy. There really wasn't a ton of variety in their games. I think they showed a ton of great JRPGs, but again, I think I needed more variety to really move them up. Nintendo, on the other hand, missing Metroid really hurts them, I think. A lot of great games coming out, but overall, you really disappointed a bunch of fans in that one, as well as we didn't really get much more Pokemon. I think people are expecting more Pokemon Sword and Shield stuff to come out there as well. My next one would have to be Ubisoft. I think Ubisoft had a great genre of games, a great variety of games coming out in particular, expanding on well-known franchises, showing us the next titles, bringing new IPs to the table. Roller Derby is probably not one to really win a big audience, but the Gods game looks pretty cool too. So I think Ubisoft is number two for me. I'm going to give number one to Microsoft this year. No big surprise. I was disappointed though, so I'm not going to say it's a huge overwhelming win. I would probably rate Microsoft at like a 7.0 or 7.5 out of 10, to be honest. A lot of this coming from, I think they held back. I think Nintendo held back. I think Microsoft held back. I mean, we know in general that there are 10 in-house studios, 10 games being worked at in-house studios at the very least that we have not seen. Initiative, with some of the best game developers in the whole industry in this quadruple A studio, we have no idea what they're working on yet. There's rumors of Fable 4 being worked on at Playground Games. So there are so many games they're holding back from. Again, I don't take away from the rating because of that. I think my rating takes away because we didn't see much gameplay in their studio or in their briefing. We also didn't see much from xCloud, which I would like to see a lot more from. Seeing that development, people got to see it at the E3 floor, but us watching live on the briefing stage really didn't get to see anything there. So I would like to see more there in particular. So Microsoft with a 7.0, 7.5 wins this conference for me. But overall, I think showing 60 games, showing a lot of variety, bringing a lot of indie games to the table as well look pretty cool. But again, 2020, I think, is when we see a ton of new games. Sony definitely has them in the works. Nintendo has big ones in the works. And Microsoft, I think we see at least 4 or 5 new IPs come out next year for them as well. I think that does it for awards. We've gone about 2 hours here. I think we can wrap the show up. Again, thank you to the live listeners for sticking around. Those that listen on the podcast, we hope you enjoy the show and hope you enjoy this closing coming your way as well.
Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. Congratulations! You made it to the end of our massive E3 recap. But before you go pre-order all those amazing games, make sure you head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can find us there regularly. And we stream on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/OTN_live. Check us out. Let us know what your thoughts are and our thoughts on the show, V3. Let us know what your favorite games are for 2019 and 2020 as well.
All right. Make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.